Snooty! Snooty! Wake up! Yeah, I was just online. No, they didn't put out the errata. No, so we're not going to see how our runes are affected now. Yeah, I knew the rumor said the 6th. It didn't happen. Yeah, well, what do you want from me? I know, we took the whole day off and now we got nothing to do. Wait, I know. Those two idiots on the internet said they were going to review the errata today. Let's see how they do without anything to report on. This one ought to be good, Snorty.
Good evening and welcome to another exciting episode of Garage Hammer with your hosts, David Witek and Christopher Barnett. In today's special episode, modeling, painting, the Black Library, army lists, and the other stuff they thought to do because the errata didn't come out today and they said they were doing a show. Hello, and welcome to episode 3 of Garage Hammer. We're coming to you only about 5 days before... No, 4 days.
4 days now.
4 days before release of 8th edition. Throwing in one last episode. Final thoughts about what we're looking at and what we're thinking before we get the book and find out everything we thought was wrong, and this is how it really works.
Dave, first of all, let me just say, shenanigans! We were supposed to get the errata today, and it didn't happen. What gives?
Rumors. Yeah, all the rumors were true about the skirmishing, but they were all wrong about the errata.
So I guess they're going to have to release it on the day that they release the book itself. Which doesn't help people who want to play that day, because instead of playing, now we've got to dig through 15 army books worth of errata.
Well, I'm hoping it at least comes out on Friday, since they're not open on... Or the corporate doesn't release the stuff on the internet over the weekend, so...
Awesome. So we're going to get a book and not know how to play it. Well, we'll just have to make do.
Well, I mean, we'll just follow the rules as they exist in these and figure out stuff, but...
We'll work on it.
Yeah. Well, I'm just happy to be here and doing a show.
Me too.
This is not going to be another two-hour extravaganza either.
No, this is more like episode 2.5 in a way. We've got the best we've got, and we'll just make the best of it.
Yeah, so this is a totally an unofficial show in any sort of, you know, twice-a-month format. You might get 3 shows this month.
So this is a bonus.
Yes.
It's like a treat.
It's a special snack treat.
That's right. 2 of these and you'll spoil your supper.
So, yes. My supper has been spoiled. So let's skip supper and go right on to our advertisers.
All right.
So we're going to give a shout-out first to who, Chris?
Unique Gifts and Games in Grays Lake, Illinois. Unique Gifts and Games has the full range of Warhammer Fantasy, Warhammer 40K, War Machine, and a plethora of board games, including... Twilight Imperium, Horus Heresy, and any number of... I can't think of the...
They've got all the Fantasy Flight games. Harrison just brought home Killer Bunnies this weekend. Him and his sister have been playing Killer Bunnies
from Outer Space?
Yes.
I remember that game when it first came out.
Yeah, I haven't actually played it, and now I have to read the rules because I keep hearing people calling shenanigans on each other. Oh, now get this, guys. Harrison, Mr. I Want to Be the High and Mighty and Noble Elves, has taken it to helping his sister by telling her how to play cards and then playing them in a way that she gets a bonus and then he turns around and smacks her down with his cards. So I had to explain to him how that's shenanigans, even though he is helping her learn how to play.
What a giver he is.
Oh, and he's actually out today, so there's not going to be a Sigmar Youth because this totally was sort of not planned to be a regular episode. So there will be no Sigmar Youth this episode, but he will be back with a vengeance next episode. Do you want to tell him about this weekend, or do you want me to tell him?
Well, this weekend is the release, obviously, of the Warhammer Fantasy 8th Edition. So in Unique Gifts and Games, they're going to be having a... we all are going to be having a release party. It's going to be starting Friday night. Show up if you want in Grays Lake, Illinois. Their website is uniquegiftsandgames.com, www.uniqueg.com to get the details. But show up. We'll have a painting contest, maybe a trivia contest, obviously the release of the book at midnight. So it's just going to be a good time. Bring some figures, maybe get a game in, just have a good time, and hang out with us.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. If people aren't bringing too many units to play games, I can't play a game and you can't play a game because we're actually kind of running the thing.
We'll see. I'll bring them just in case.
But I might. Yeah, we're going to bring some stuff to do some demos at the very least. Set up a few things and just see how the new sort of combat works. People kind of can see it on the board played out in front of them.
We could set up a demo where my Dark Elves swarm all over your dwarves and dance in their graves.
Is that the part where they dance and then they think we're dead, but we're the dwarves, and so we say, okay, now it's our turn, and we hit you in the face with an axe?
Are you suggesting that your dwarves are actually undead?
I'm suggesting that you're rambling.
No, it's entirely possibly true.
Okay. So, Unique Gifts and Games, Friday. Store will be open all day. They open at 11. I don't think they're closing beforehand, but I know there is some sort of tournament-y thing going on until about 9. Mm-hmm. We'll be there around. So, yeah, but the official thing is set up from 10, and then they start selling the book and stuff at midnight and probably till about 12:30, 1 o'clock.
Come in, show your true colors, talk about your favorite army, and pick up the book and have some fun with us.
Yes, yes. Couple people we want to thank this week. Daniel Fallon. Daniel was a student of mine until he turned to evil. And, sorry. And,
Darth Daniel.
Yes. He's been helping us with the computer, which is good, because that thing...
Dave and I are not smart on the computer.
We not get it.
So, in any case, Daniel, thank you very much for all the help that you've provided to us on setting up the website, all of the bizarro code.
And he did an exchange for a chicken sandwich meal at McDonald's, which was really a great deal.
I would have to say, yeah.
Of course, he hasn't called me back on the next job that I need for him to finish on our site, so
probably because he's going to want out. I'll help you again, but this time it's going to have to be Charlie Trotters.
Hey, it's worth it. He did a good job. Oh,
we do have something else we need to shout out. We have our first sponsor this week, so I'd like to get a shout out to Brian Martin in Lafayette, Indiana. Brian, I've known you a long time. You're a good friend of mine. You're a Vampire Count player, and he wanted me specifically to shout out. This is his message: "Hey, Games Workshop, bring back Nagash again." Now, if you've seen the old Nagash model, may I have my own personal shout-out? Maybe resculpt the guy. But, you know, for Brian Martin, do whatever you got to do. Bring him back. I don't know if they need a new book right away.
Well, I expect it any month now, because the new Tomb Kings are coming out, so mm-hmm. they're probably going to put out a new Nagash. And if they weren't, you know they're listening to this show.
I don't think that Nagash should be part of the Tomb Kings, though. They would oust him. They don't want him to be part of the Tomb Kings.
I guess not. But here's what I'm thinking. Hmm. I'm thinking, because GW listens so intently to this show, that between you and Brian...
Well, with bated breath, I would say that they would.
You and Brian just got yourselves a new sculpted Nagash coming back again.
Yeah, sounds like it.
But hey, Brian, thanks for sponsoring the show. He's our first one and only sponsor, and that was actually cool to get an email saying, hey, there's some money in this here PayPal donation account. Go take a look. And there it was.
In any case, Brian Martin, thank you very much for your support. We hope you fare well, and maybe we can get into talking about some Vampire Count's tactics a little later on.
Absolutely.
We might be able to steer you in a particular direction if you need it. We also want to bring up Legions.
Yeah, we got a little bit of a little boost thing coming in from our friends at Legions Games in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I know Bill, the manager over at Legions, and I told him about the show, and he listened, and Bill is, he liked the show, and not only did he like the show, but if you live in the Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania area, and you shop at Legions Games, dude, they're like open till like 2 in the morning on the weekends. I've called there late.
Yeah, that's like a community of power gamers. I have to approve.
I mean, I don't know if that's all the time, but I know a couple times I've called really late on Friday thinking they might have been closed, and they're like, no, we're going to go for like 3 more hours. And I'm like, okay, dude, it's late. The news is over. So they'll be there selling the Warhammer. But also, if you are a person who shops at Legions Games, they have this reward point system. And if you go to the forums... there is a thread that Bill started. It's called New Warhammer Podcast from a Customer. That would be us. And if you go to there, it tells you on there how to get more reward points toward your whatever it is that your guys are doing.
So if you're Legion's customer, get into their forum right away. Look for a thread. Listen to our show, obviously, and see what you can do. And follow that thread to get yourself a little.
I think it was 20 rewards points or something like that. If you can get to the thread and find out what to do, so that's pretty cool. And thank you to Bill and them for doing that, because that's pretty.
What's their website, awesome. Dave?
Oh, www.legionsgames.com. LEGIONSGAMES.
A great place to go for your Warhammer 40K, I imagine War Machine, and many other products as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and before we get to our week in gaming, we're probably going to take a break in just a minute.
Mm-hmm.
But we have one more last shout-out to type thing to give. We're obviously going to be gaming all weekend and trying out the new game and playing the new game. But there is one person who's going to be doing live podcasting all that weekend on their show, Jeff Carroll and Podhammer. Go to podhammer.net. Yeah, he's going to be on all weekend. I'm going to have him on. When I'm home, he's going to be on. They're going to be just talking about it. They're trying to raise money to go to come here to Chicago.
Adepticon next year. I'm hoping to shake his hand next year.
Yeah, that'd be kind of cool. Hopefully they'll come down here and we get to meet him. We're actually going to play a little clip from his show during the break where Jeff explains explains everything that they're doing for this marathon show. It's starting July 10th, and I think it was 8 a.m., Jeff said. I think it's 8 a.m.
Is it plus 10?
That's GMT plus 10, and so now we get to make fun of people who don't understand that. GMT plus 10. If you're in Chicago,
just go to Google and look up what Australian time is.
Australian is GMT plus 10. So you go figure out where you are in GMT, and it's that many hours different. And it's a marathon. So if you tune in an hour or so off, you'll still be there. Get the day right. You'll be fine. It's GMT plus 10. And now, if I can get this clip to work, we'll play a little bit from Jeff, and then we'll be back talking about what we've been gaming, building, reading, and what we think of these. What's going to happen to these books.
That's the plan. See you in a bit.
New intro. Alrighty, folks, welcome to another episode of Podhammer. I'm your host, Jeff Carroll. Episode 66, brand new intro there. Something a little bit different. Welcome to the show, everybody. Alright, well, we've come to the tail end of the show, and it's time to make the big announcement that I was talking about. It's massive. It's
massive.
Huge. We're talking about 8th edition all week. We've been talking about it all show and all last show. We're really going to be talking about it for the next 2 months. But we had to do something to celebrate 8th edition. And this is what we're going to do. The Podhammer Marathon Show. Kicking off 8th edition. We're going to be broadcasting live from the Dave Palmer's Gaming Den.
If we can get our technology right. Otherwise, we'll have to find another one.
We'll be cramming it into this apartment. Starting at Saturday the 10th, 8 a.m. plus 10 GMT, the entire Podhammer crew will be camped out in Dave's house for the weekend. We'll be drinking and playing 8th edition all weekend, staying up all night to play, and we'll be broadcasting continuously. We will be tag teaming, as we've learned the game, and then come back in and talk about it on the show, and then go back out and swap with people that are not playing currently, and going all day and into the night as long as we possibly can.
I'm glad you
Someone's
said as long
just
as
got
you
to clip that last couple of sentences you just said, because that was awesome. I still don't even know if we're going to actually fit some Warhammer in there, but apparently we're going to be tag teaming and switching all weekend.
It's going to be hot.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah,
and we're going to be without shirts on and naked.
Now, the idea is we want you listeners out there to be able to experience learning the game and playing the game in this new form as we do live. The idea would be to you to put Podhammer on loudspeakers in your garage or in your gaming hall or your local store. As you play the game, you'll be listening to us talk about the games we're playing through the weekend as we get to know the new rules and just having a lot of fun along the way. Now, the rules are, we'll keep going if the goal for this weekend is to raise money. We're on a kick to raise money for Podhammer, and what the goal is we want to go to Adepticon in Chicago next
Woo-hoo!
Year. That's our goal.
Yeah.
It's going to be massive.
Yeah. You guys get to see the fury.
Yep. James is on board.
Fury's on board. James is actually staying at home. Yeah, Kent Fury's actually coming. And when that boy turns up, James has nothing to do with him.
Your leash barely goes to Jeff's. Dave's den.
It's a new beast.
It's a business trip.
It's a business trip.
Dave Palmer will be there. Dave Palmer will be coming to Chicago next year if we raise enough money. And this is where we start raising money right now.
It's a money raise-a-thon from here till there.
Yep. And so we're going to keep going another hour for every $50 that's donated on this weekend. So we'll go all night and keep talking. We've got organized call-ins from special guests like Trent Dennison and Ben Curry from Bad Dice. He's going to be calling in and talking about his thoughts as he gets a hold of the game and plays it that first weekend. And so every $50 will go another hour. And those donations can start right now. So, podhammer.net/donate. If someone donates, like, you know, a couple of grand right now, then we're done.
We'll do a show for an hour and get drunk. Yeah. That's it.
Now, the limit will be, obviously, that we've all got to go to work on Monday morning. So we will go all weekend.
Well, no, I'll let you off, Jeff. You can actually you can be drunk, sit there all day Monday in your underpants, talking, all right, and drooling at your mouth.
It's all good. James is now my boss, so I can drink and talk on this thing until my voice dies, and we're just going to keep going because we want to raise money because we want to go to Chicago next year. It's incredibly far away for us, and we think it's going to be an awesome time. So if you're a US listener and planning on going to Adepticon next year, you'll be able to meet and hang out with us. I don't know what we're going to be doing. We might do a show. We might play some games. Sure. The details, obviously, a long way away. But this is what it's going to be all about. So we want you to tune in and listen as you're playing the game and learning the game. And listen to us do the same thing. So it starts at 8 a.m. plus 10 GMT on July the 10th, the Podhammer Marathon Show. You can find out more details at podhammer.net/marathon. And really, we want all your support that you can get because this is going to be huge. This is the next big thing for Podhammer. I'm really excited about it. We're going to set up webcams not only in the studio where we're talking, but we're going to have webcam set up in Dave's gaming room where you'll be able to see the guys playing games. And we'll be able to switch back and forth.
In Dave's bedroom.
No, we don't want to do that.
Oh, that's already done. We'll set that up right now. Like, yeah, I've got a Dave cam going 24/7 already.
And this is Tanya.
So,
are we going to do dares for money?
Tanya. Yeah, look, it's all about raising money. So we're going to be giving out prizes like, Inner Circle memberships, and we've got some other merchandise coming in very soon that we're going to be giving away as competitions. But it's all about raising money. So, you know, if you want if you want James to finger blast Kendall on air for $400.
$400? I'm doing the finger blast, and I'm doing for
$20. Look, there's
Kendall, you're worth more to me than that. You're worth more. $25.
If there's beer drinking challenges, you know, whatever you want. Like, we're not going to do anything. Yeah, anything. We're all about
But to help out with this,
coin.
I'm helping Jeff out with this, so keep your eye on the main page. It's going to start coming some awesome surveys coming through, so use that. We'll be asking questions, what you want to see on this the Podhammer-a-thon, and just other general questions which will help us build the information we need to produce a better show for you.
Exactly. All these funds are about the future of Podhammer, and look, James is, I'll give him credit here, he's a very motivated businessman, and he's been pushing me to do more things with Podhammer, and we really see a future for it, and this is the first step of that. And
I'm just looking for a junket to go to America, really.
Oh, yeah, and the other part of his goal is to, you know, get pissed and hang out with all you blokes in America in Chicago next year, so we're really looking forward to doing this, and it's going to be the weekend. Good. The 8th edition weekend is going to be really good too. Like.
So who's signed up so far of the crew?
Oh, well, Dave's house, so he's going to be there.
Yeah, yep.
Maddie's coming up. We've got, Kendall will be calling in from Times Square.
Oh, that's
on-site
right.
On-site reporter. He's going to find a game shop. He's going to be on.
Is he going to find a game shop?
America, yep. Yeah.
So if you're someone in New York and you're a gaming club, we need to hear from you. So Kendall can go in.
Exactly. Let's do that. Yeah, I don't know how keen his girlfriend will be.
No, Belle's fine. We'll tee her up. We'll tell her this is the day he's got to do it. So, yeah. if you're a hobby store out there and you've got the ability to do some Skype action, let us know so we can tee Kendall to go there and visit you.
Yep.
And he is a master, so, you know, it is a bit of celebrity sort of loving.
Exactly.
And we might team up with some merchandise so we can do some snappy shots over there.
We'll load him up with some stuff. I think that's going to be really cool. You know, we're going to have call-ins from people. We want you guys that are listening and taking part in it, we want you guys to call in and talk about it. You know, we've got a lot of time to fill, and you know, so it's going to be. We can talk about anything you want. So like I said, it's all about donating and raising money. And the more you donate, the longer we'll keep going. We're prepared to go the whole weekend and keep talking and keep having fun and bring entertainment for you guys for that weekend. So that's the big announcement, the Podhammer Marathon, podhammer.net/marathon. You can read up about it. We're going to put a post up of that this week. So I'm very excited about that. Anything else you want to talk about, James?
No, just the surveys I'm putting together.
Yep.
Just to let everyone know, something I used to do in my past, just sending out, there'd be basically a link on the website. You click onto it, you fill it out. All the information stays in-house. It doesn't go anywhere else. It's just another means for us to get a better understanding of what's going on out there and so we can, you know, make the show better.
Excellent.
So if you can participate, great. And those that do participate, there's always prizes. There's always good stuff that goes with it.
Yep.
So, you know, we really want to look after you guys for, you know, sticking with Jeff for this long.
Thank you. My ex-wife did it for 8 years, so why can't you?
She tolerated you. The fans out there love you, Jeff.
And I think we're done.
All right, folks, we are back. This time we're going to be talking about our weekend gaming. Frankly, Dave, I've been gearing up for the beginning of 8th edition. I was looking over the armies that I like to play, and it looks like more infantry is the way to go.
Well, yeah.
So I've been building. I picked up a new box of Dark Elf Spearmen. Is that outside of the Chaos Dwarves? In my heart, Chaos Dwarves are my army. But when you go to your local gaming store, most people give you that sort of cross-eyed, what are these look. So in regular tournaments, circuit settings, I guess Dark Elves are my new direction. So I've been buying and painting up lots and lots and lots and lots of Spearmen. Spearmen are pretty easy to paint. I'm not trying to get fancy. Not at all.
No, they're your core guys. Yeah. You got to give those guys three colors and a go.
Yeah, they're all going to be cross-eyed and pasty.
Well, they didn't have to be cross-eyed. And...
Well, I mean, you can't tell anyway. That they don't really sculpt the eyes on most of them. But they're, you know. They're okay. I'm working on painting those guys as quickly as I can because I'm envisioning taking advantage of the Horde rule for the Dark Elf Spearmen, not even bothering with the shield. So that's 6 points a model, 40 of them, or maybe 45, depending on how it lays out.
You're going between 240 and 300 points.
It's expensive, but, you know, because they have such high initiative, I'm going to give them the banner of armor piercing. I don't remember what that's called for the Dark Elves. So they'll hit at strength 3, but I'll punch through a little bit of armor. And I'm going to be getting a lot of attacks.
And that's where you have your smaller units on the sides. I mean, that's the big block. You run up the middle.
The way I see it, the first tournament I'm going to be building for is the Unique Gifts and Games tournament that's going to be in the 14th of August. And it's going to be a real short jobber. That's going to be a 1,600-point army. So I'm looking at mostly core units.
I'm taking my dwarves again, but I'm changing up because I don't want to come in dead flipping last again.
You just forgot to take enough shooting last time to entice people to come across.
I got 1 point. I came in dead last out of all the people. Harrison beat me even. I was the laughingstock. My students who came to cheer me on were mocking me by the end. And Mike Casson, you know I'm talking about you. And you're going to be at that release on Friday, and I'm going to give you grief. Because I can.
So what are you putting together? Are you modeling or painting right now to get prepared? Or you're probably putting together those Beastmen though right now, aren't
yes,
you?
Yes. Okay.
We've got this thing on Friday. It's the release party, and one of the items that we're giving to people to paint are a box of Beastmen just to get practice in.
And I'm just building them and priming them so that they're ready for the painting. We'll have a little contest. Winner gets to get some GW merchandise.
So you've got from Unique Gifts and Games. Gores and Ungores?
There's Gores and Ungores.
Are they easy to put together?
Yeah, they're in fact, I kind of, you know, the more I build them, the more I really like them. I really like the models. I'm just looking at them, and it's just like, and I'm sorry, I hate to play the cheap guy, but $25 for 10 of these guys now, and you need lots and lots of them.
Yeah, they're and, a little pricey.
I mean, for 10 models, $25, I mean, I don't know. I'm used to the getting 16 or 20 from your orcs and your dwarves for $35.
That's how much it cost me for my spearmen. It was 20 of them for $35
and
American
they dollars. Went 25 for 10. And, I mean, I'm building, this is the one in the old box.
Just to be on the clear side, folks, I know we've got international listeners, so we're talking about American dollars at the moment, obviously.
We're in America. We always talk about American dollars.
Well.
I'm sorry, I am the ugly American. I just am, and Chris knows it, and we hate to do that. I hate to do that. I'm more jokingly the ugly American than anything else, but I do love America, and so sometimes I'll just make jokes to the, and it's just, I love to watch Chris just squirm.
This is coming from my friend David Wojtek, who is a you know, my Polish prince.
That's me. Don't say it like that, though. People are going to think that you're trying to date me.
Wow.
I am not his Polish prince.
Let's get it out there. I'm not trying to date Dave. All right, good.
Okay, good.
We can always clip that out.
No. I think we should leave that in.
Wow, uncomfortable. All right.
I think we got the title for our show. We're not dating.
That's fine.
Episode 3, We're Not Dating. Okay. There you go.
Awesome. So glad that happened. So, Dave, what are you modeling these days, he said petulantly.
No, I like the gores and the ungores. And I modeled them with two-hand weapons, figuring.
Yeah, I agree.
We had that whole discussion, and I said, you know what? They're naked without a shield. And having the shield does give them the 6-up basic, you know, shooting save. And the 6-up ward save in close combat to the front. But I'm thinking if I'm running some ungores as a screen in front of them to get them a -1 to shooting against them, mm-hmm. and I'm just going up the guts with them, that plus the models just look so much cooler carrying two big axes.
I agree with you.
I like the articulation on these models.
Yeah.
I like the way the head is. I mean, I don't know if the new ones are like this or not, but I like that the bodies, the torso and the head can kind of go in at different sorts of angles.
Was it like a sort of a ball joint where the...
Yeah.
Okay, so you can position them any way you want to.
Yeah, so a lot of the times you had these, when you had the arms up and the head's back, it was just... I really want to build these models.
You know, there's nothing quite as inspiring to get you going with an army than starting to put them together, because you already start to envision having a block of them. I like the Beastmen. I always sort of had them in the back of my mind as, that might be fun to play, but they've always taken second place. Actually seeing the models kind of brings that all back to the surface.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, oh, man. Well, besides the gores and the ungores, what else are you putting together? Like, I know I'm thinking about the 8th edition in general, but I'm also looking at this tournament. I'm thinking about my first army that I'm trying to put together.
I've got enough dwarfs built to field about a 5,000 point army, so it's not a question of it. I've got enough painted to field my... I can field a little more. I need to paint that cannon.
Well, here's a thought then. I know this is a little off the subject. Do you think that 8th edition then does not really impact most of the decisions you make for dwarfs? Rather, it just changes the way you play rather than what you have to field?
Oh, possibly. Why don't we talk about that when we talk about the different books?
Sure, sure, sure.
Because that's definitely, Yes and no.
Okay. But you think most of your army is going to remain the same, so you don't have to paint anything different right now? You still got to do a cannon, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the painting schemes don't have to change at all, basically. Yeah. Okay, so what have you read?
What have I read?
Yes.
You mean...
Or what have you been reading? That's like the last thing in the gaming model, gaming reading. And
on the show notes. Yeah, okay, yeah. So we're going to be going from painting. Yeah, right now I'm painting Spearmen, and I'm going to have to go on Corsairs after that. Reading, I finished that first book of the Malekith. You've loaned me the second one, Shadow King. I haven't started it yet, just because I promised my brother I'd get through a couple of Civil War novels first that I'm enjoying. Mm-hmm. But so the next one on my reading block is the Shadow King. And now, last episode, I gave Harrison all manner of grief over the High Elves because it's fun to do it. I love watching him squirm. But it's funny because the truth of the matter is, it was a darn good read. Really good read. And it was inspiring to me a little bit. I would play High Elves, you know, just for the fun of it, just to try the army out, the rules for them.
Yeah.
People make fun of Elves in general, but I already play Dark Elves. I look like a freaking elf. Hi, folks. I'm thin. I'm really tall. And I'm nothing but angles. I'm an elf. What do you want from me? That's how it is. So I might as well play them. But I was looking at the...
I'm fat and average height. I have a beard, folks. I am a dwarf.
Or at least an ogre.
No, I'm not tall enough to be an ogre.
Well, you're not short enough to be a dwarf.
Yeah, but I'm likely to be crippled and walk slumped and shorter than I am to grow a few feet in the next few years.
Well, if you hit people with a club, it's like you're a short ogre.
Seems like okay.
Seems to me
the tangent police are running in here.
That's true. Okay, well, let's rein it back. In any case, what I was going to say was from that Sundering series, the one written by. We're losing track here. We're losing steam.
Okay,
rein it in.
So your series, The Sundering.
The Sundering. It was very inspiring to me. It actually makes me think about, okay, if I was going to play High Elves, how would I do it? I was kind of looking at those Mantic figures. Is it manticgames.com or just mantic.com?
I think it's manticgames.
There's an alternative miniature line that's really growing steam in terms of quality.
They're Kings of War series,
yeah,
which...
They're pretty good.
Basically, I don't think actually... I never saw an actual game or rules.
No, they don't exist. No,
we got these cool models. Come and buy them and use them for other games.
But the thought was, if I was going to play High Elves rather than buy the Games Workshop ones, which are good, they're fine, but... I might go the Mantic route to make it cheaper, but the real thought here was I wanted to paint them like they all came from Naggaroth. Nagareth. Whatever. You know, they don't include pronunciation guides. But rather than paint them like high elves, I would paint them like elves before the Sundering who just hail from the region known as Nagareth.
So a lot of blacks and silvers.
Black and silver and, you know, purple manners. And I thought that would be fun, you know. I can still be my Nagareth guys, and
you can still do some gold highlights. So as long as you stay away from the purples, though, you can.
Yeah, I'd probably
lighten
stay away
them up a little bit because you don't want them to look sinister, but you want them to look bad. You
well,
know what I'm
saying? Even the Nagareth guys were supposed to be sinister, just not evil. You know.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, they're grim. They're grim, yeah, and determined, they're, yeah. And they're you know almost wordless and.
That second book was awesome. Now, I'm starting to gosh. And once I get through these, though, if I don't have the third book for any of the series, now I'm stopped with three series at two books apiece.
Then out of the trilogy. Forced to read the Horus Heresy or something, yeah.
Well, I actually got the Horus Heresy. I like the fluff for 40K. I'm interested to read the book. I want to read a little bit more of the fluff from the actual rule book to kind of get it before I start reading their fiction.
I like it. I don't think I like it as much as other people seem to love it, but I like it. I get a little tired of, brother, my
Well, I've read 11
consecrated Gotrek and, bolt throwers, blah, 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 you know.
I've read 11 Gotrek and Felix novels, and so,
if,
I mean...
If I hear cleanse with consecrated flame or one more time, or... enough.
I don't even know what that means. I'm so proud to have no idea what you're talking about. I mean, I have a concept, but I don't know it.
Every other thought out of their minds is, oh, there are orcs on that planet. We'll cleanse it with purifying flame. Yeah, okay, got it. Next.
We're fantasy in the future. Yeah. We're fantasy in the future.
Pretty much. Anyway.
I like science fiction, too. I know there's going to be people like, hey, I like sci-fi, you ass. Dude, I love Star Trek. I love Star Wars. I love all that stuff.
Oh, I'm going to be...
Did I mention
I'm going to play a game? I'm going to Gen Con. I've already arranged a, you know, sort of an evening where I'm going to be sitting around drinking, and I'll probably play a game of 40K. I said, sure, you provide an army?
Yeah, provided me an army, you know, and I hope you just pound on them just to prove you don't actually have to play to win.
Beats me, man. I don't know.
That would be awesome.
My guess is that's not going to happen.
That would be so awesome.
Oh, it's not going to happen.
I roll, I shoot a lot of your guys, they die. I move forward, I shoot some more guys, they all die. Oh, look, I won!
No, my good friend Carlos Fernandez, who actually works at a great game store called Game Preserve.
Oh, you're playing with Carlos?
Yeah.
Carlos, I didn't mean that one bit, and I know you'll beat Christopher fair and square.
Carlos will destroy me, but he's giving me the option of two very good armies.
No, I just Zinch, don't want to make fun of Carlos.
I could have taken Zinch demons. I could be taking Zinch chaos marines, which I think have ward saves or something like that, or Tyranids, my Zerg, my bugs.
We're Tyranids.
Oh, speaking of which, Brian Martin, the gentleman who provided us with the sponsorship, he was one of my online opponents in StarCraft. So I'll see you hopefully by the end of the month online. It's fun. You should try it. First hit's free.
I bought Blood Bowl and I looked at it and I said, yeah, I don't know how to play this game. I'm on the computer. No idea how to play it. Then I look at and it's like, okay, well, here's the little PDF with the rules. So I look at the rules and I go through installation, don't need that. Then I get to the rules and it actually says this. This isn't the rules for Blood Bowl. This is the rules for how to use the computer to do the moves.
Right.
And so you got to download the rules for Blood Bowl.
Yep.
And they have competition rules on the website, but I didn't see anything about
Dave,
the basic rules.
I will just bring over, I have like, I not only do I have a regular Blood Bowl board, I have the old one in styrofoam.
See, folks, this is what I wanted to do. Now someone's going to teach me how to play.
I'll teach you how to play. It's
it looks really cool on the computer.
It's not simple. It'll take a few minutes. You might have to listen.
Ugh, okay, forget it. You been reading anything else?
No, I can't read.
Okay. I just started Nagash. I'm on like page 15, the first of the Nagash trilogy for the Time of Legends. I am looking forward to, they're doing a Teclis and Tyrion trilogy, and the guy who started Gotrek and Felix is writing it, so I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
I did read two things that were totally off the GW radar, but they're fantastic.
Okay.
Changes, you saw me reading that and going on about Harry Dresden on my Facebook.
Yeah.
This is like the 13th Harry Dresden. He's a detective, but he's a wizard, but he's not a Harry Potter wizard. He's like a cool kick-ass sort of cowboy wizard. I don't know how, not a cowboy, but I mean, he wears his leather duster and he's got all his magical charms and stuff on it to keep him from getting shot.
Steel horse?
No, but it's just fantastic. The guy who Jim Butcher has just got a fantastic way with dialogue. He's a narrator. He's like Philip Marlowe, the old detective series you'd hear on the radio.
Yeah,
the Philip Marlowe. He's like that. He's narrating his own case.
Okay,
he gets pounded on sometimes. He takes a beating, but he's the good guy. He's doing the right thing. He's got a very strong, and he's got a similar sense of humor to us. He writes a lot like Joss Whedon writes dialogue. The guy who wrote Buffy and Firefly.
I certainly know who the guy is. Yeah,
right.
I never.
But you saw Serenity, the sort of witty banter that goes on.
Yeah.
That makes kind of for some enjoyable dialogue.
That's sort of everyone's a lot wittier than anyone in normal life would be. Yeah.
He writes it a lot like that for Dresden, and Dresden is just a natural born smartass.
It sounds like the author definitely has his target audience in mind.
And then I read Hunger Games, which is geared towards teens, but this is a fantastic book. I know we don't have time to discuss it now, but listen, Hunger Games. And if you're a younger reader or a high school reader or you like reading teen novels, Hunger Games. It's post-apocalyptic future. Kids get chosen in a lottery fashion to go fight for fame and glory and win food for the rest of their lives if they kill the other 23 kids in the competition. I couldn't explain it. I did. You got to read it. It's good. I'm sorry. I do my book review. We don't have time for it. I'm sorry.
No worries.
So you go to Paris, France.
And well, I'll tell you what. Why don't we take ourselves a little bit of a break, and when we get back, we'll get into our last-minute predictions for 8th edition. And
book by book, talk about what we think is going to be the big changes for each army.
That's the plan. Yay!
All right.
We're back.
We are back.
All right. Well, let's get into it. Let's talk some Warhammer.
Let's talk some Warhammer.
So,
let's talk about some swords.
Let's talk about they took my father's sword.
You killed my family. You killed my people. You took my father's sword.
This is what happens when you watch Conan the
Barbarian
right before.
You killed my father. You kill my mother, you kill my people!
Which is perfect, by the way, for when you wanted to sit down and paint a whole bunch of miniatures. Nothing is quite as inspiring as Conan the Barbarian and a painting table, except you keep getting distracted because you want to impersonate every possible thing you see.
You gotta pick a movie that you've watched 1,000 times that you can ignore. Because you have it on in the background. The podcasts are good for that, too, because you can kind of listen. If you miss something, it's no big deal.
It's no good for me, because when I listen to a podcast, I actually kind of want to hear what they're saying.
I do, too, so which is why I go with a movie. I usually go with Dawn of the Dead. I've literally seen that movie 300 or 400 times.
Oh, I mean, I am so sick of zombies. I'm glad you enjoy them.
No, I'm talking the original, though. That's still such a great movie. And it's a movie I could put on in the background. It's about 2 hours and, 2 hours and 12 minutes?
I don't know.
So it's a nice big chunk of time that I don't have to watch more than about 3 minutes of the movie.
Okay.
Like, it's on. I can listen to it. It's got witty dialogue. I look over there. Tom Savini puts the machete in the guy's head. I go back to painting. I look again. A guy takes a bullet in the head. I go back again. I watch about 12 minutes of movie. I get 2 hours of painting. But it's on.
Me? I watch Casablanca.
Yeah, I'd be paying too much attention to that.
I love that movie, but I've seen it about 300 or 400
but
times.
But I'd be paying too much.
You're right. I love that movie. That's one of my very favorites.
It's a good one.
For ignoring movies, I turn the movie off. I put on the music.
Crush your enemies. See them driven before you. And hear the lamentation of the women.
Arr.
I still want to know who that smiley guy was. When Conan's practicing with his sword, and then the Asian guy jumps up and straightens his sword and slaps him, and he's just got that weird little head plate, and he's like laughing and smiling and looking at him like, I don't know, it was kind of a weird look. And then the Asian guy kicks him in the gut for giving Arnold the look.
Folks, the next time you watch Conan the Librarian.
Conan the Librarian, you dork. 3, 4.
And at the 4 o'clock mark, we're discussing Conan on Garage Hammer. When you watch the movie, it's the first like 15, 20 minutes or so, and Conan is being taught by a sort of Mongolian-looking sword instructor. And there's this guy sort of smiling knowingly at Conan as he's training. And the teacher apparently doesn't like that at all and kicks him in the groin. And what's the point of that guy? Why is he there?
That's what I was asking last night. Like, that guy.
We decided that, Dave and I decided, okay, so the director must have thought, we need sort of a D-bag right here to get kicked in the groin to really accentuate the shot.
You see, Arnold took a slap. It didn't even hurt him, but he's practicing. Look at the other guys who are here. They just don't stack up to Conan. Of course, the guy was a douche. It's, you know.
So, Dave, what do you think of Warhammer?
I like Warhammer.
Yeah, let's...
Oh, Christ. Okay, so we're back, and we're going to talk about what we think about changes in the... And we're going to kind of go and try to keep these quick. So, in the beginning, we're picking army books at random out of the pile of all the army books.
I'd say this across the board. The biggest change that people need to keep in mind is that for lords and for heroes, the slots aren't the way they were. You're not limited in the same way. You've got a certain amount of points to take, and you can very easily take all of your lord choices. If you have two lord choices, one as a fighter and the other one as a wizard, if you keep them both on foot, you can take them both, and that's a real strategy now. Or if you wanted to go magic heavy, you can take two wizards.
But battle wizards are 65 points.
You have it from Empire now?
Yes. Oh, by the way, okay, we're grabbing books at random. I've got a pile here. I'm not looking. I'm just grabbing a book, and Empire is the first one we drew, which we don't play a lot of Empire, but I like the Empire.
So, out of nowhere, Dave, do you think that the Empire will improve in the tournament setting? Or do you think they'll remain the same or get worse?
I think they're going to get a little better. I think they're going to get a little better because there are so many unit choices that are 5-6 points that if you want to have a couple of hordes and then take a couple of your tougher core units to come along on the side and stuff.
I agree. I don't think that they're going to be in the same level as what used to be the top three, the demons, the dark elves, and the vampire counts.
Uh-huh.
But I would say they're just under them. Where in 7th edition you saw the Skaven and you saw the Lizardmen, I think Empire will take that place.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see why not. I mean...
Well, they've already got the shooting, which is going to tear everything apart. But you've also got large blocks. The biggest issue they have still is their leadership is reasonably low. But they're going to have snipers, which means you're anti-BSB. If armies are relying on their battle standard bearer, their wizards, you can pick them out easily.
Right. But, I mean, here, you can get an Archlector. You know, you get the Archlector on the War Altar starts off at 225. That's only, I mean, on a 2,000-point game.
Is that the Battle Pope?
Yeah.
You're going to still see him, I think.
Yeah, well, for 225, that's literally just under half of your maximum for your lords. You can still take a general. Or a Templar would be pushing it, a Grandmaster Templar.
But, I mean, you have options that you didn't before.
Right.
You can easily take a large handful of cheap wizards, level ones, and overwhelm your opponent in the magic phase without a problem.
Well, I mean, you're still going to have only up to about 12 dice. But an Archlector...
True, but you're going to be able to cast 6 spells, no problem.
But I'm just... But you can take that Archlector and still take the general and have the general be your general because they have the same leadership.
Yep.
And not have to worry as much about that Archlector being your general. You get to heroes. A captain... Oh, nobody takes captains because they're either taking battle wizards or warrior priests.
But you can now if you really felt you needed to.
Because they're 50 points and you've got 500 points to spend.
In a 2,000 point game.
Battle wizards, you could take 4 of them, level 1.
Easily.
And if you're psychotic and you want to play the cheese, I'll take the fire casters and I'll default them all to fireball because they can all take the default spell.
This is a strategy that works well with almost every army, but it's especially effective in Empire because they're so cheap. There's no reason why not just throw one die at it. Win or lose, broken concentration won't apply. Broken concentration is the rule that says that if you do not successfully cast, he can't cast another one. Well, if he's only got one spell, who cares? Throw one die at it. You're going to be as efficient as you need to be.
Well, yeah, if you get a lot of dice and you got 3 wizards, just divide it up evenly between the 3 of them.
True, but even if you...
I got 9 dice, I got 3 wizards, I can each throw 3 at this fireball. You might even pick a level 2 because you can pick whatever level you want.
But even if you only have a limited number of dice. There's really no reason why you can't just
throw one at it and hope 50-50. Yeah, you're not going to botch.
So that's Empire. What else do you think? I think overall, yeah, their infantry has become stronger.
Their special units are still, I mean, great swords.
Halberds and great swords are better than they used to be. Because you're attacking in two ranks, you've effectively doubled the strength of that unit.
It's 10 points a model.
But they come with full plate, so they have, I believe that's a 4+.
That is a 4+.
So they're fantastic.
Better leadership, lower initiative than swordsman, but that's because that thing's
heavy.
Well,
they have two-handed swords. Who cares?
Oh, it's a great weapon, though, so they always hit last.
Yeah. I mean, so it doesn't matter. You know you're going to attack second.
And I'm going to be taking pistoliers.
But for 10 points, I would go that route.
Pistoliers and outriders. You got your fast cavalry shooting the hell out of people.
You're going to be seeing that. And your guns and your crossbows and everything else are going to be outriders.
All right, next book. And like I said, we're not going in depth. We're not doing an army review. We will do that. Oh, and by the way, what's your friend Brian?
Brian Martin.
Brian, who sponsors? Thanks again, Brian.
Mm-hmm. He plays
VC. So once we get the new errata, and we will play a couple of VC, see what's going on, and give our opinion on that. I mean, he sponsored a show, wanted to hear it, so
yeah,
we'll definitely get that going. Wood Elves,
Dave. This is an army you play. All right, so
I know.
I don't play them as much. I'll make this one obvious observation. Treekin. You're going to see him in every army, I think, and you're going to see
blocks. I'm going to play at least six in a block.
Six is the magic number. Well, six is that min-max.
Yeah, but I'd like to get six, maybe a seventh though, so that way if I can get... I want to get to the battle.
You take three wounds, you take up to five wounds, and you still have ranks.
Their initiative's three.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Their movement is five.
That's it? I thought it was six.
No.
Oh, really?
No, they're not... I mean, they're trees. They're big, but they don't... They're lumbering sort of thing.
Do they come
no
with scaly skin? Or
yeah,
they come with
they got
a
scaly skin four up. They're forest spirits, so they get a ward save against non-magical.
And?
A ward save.
Three attacks, strength five?
Three attacks, strength five, toughness five, weapon skill four.
Well, that's an obvious one, then. You're going to see them in every army.
65 points a pop. So you're talking, if you take seven of them, 420 plus 455. That's a fat, I mean, that's half your special units right there.
True.
But if you take seven of them, I mean, these guys are going to come blustering in for, yeah, at 400 with the champion about. You're looking at, what, 19 attacks?
19 attacks with a champion.
19 attacks.
At strength five.
At strength five.
The same reason you're going to see more Ushabti, Rat Ogres, Trolls.
Warhawk Ormers. Riders, I don't know if I'm going to see more of them. They're still 40 points. They're flying cavalry. They've got hit and run. Flying calf. I don't know. Now,
up until recently, I assumed that flying cavalry was not skirmisher, but now there's a suggestion that they were. So we're going to have to get the rule book in our hands again and do some more in-depth.
And I still like the Wild Riders. I don't care what anybody says. I like the fact that... plus, they have initiative five. The Wild Riders do. And if they don't charge, they get the extra attack.
Okay.
They get an extra attack on any turn they don't charge. So they go up to two attacks apiece.
I think your archers have improved.
Well, that's possible.
Well, I'm saying they've improved because whereas before you needed a line of 10 with no ranks, now you can have a rank of 5 in two ranks, and you get the same number of attacks.
Oh, that's true.
Which means that you can actually have a the same frontage, meaning that you can have 5, 5, and 5 versus 10.
I can have
10
shooters
and
not take up nearly as much room in the front.
You're taking up less room for more shots.
Yep.
So that means that...
And I don't think... I never had a chance to really upgrade them to scouts. I never got a handle on skirmishers and scouts because I didn't play them a lot with the
dwarves. Well, you're going to have to...
And now I don't know if I'm even going to...
So I think your dryads are going to be taking up more room. They're going to be clunkier than they used to be.
They can move wherever. They're going to be a little clunkier, but they can move wherever.
They can. What I mean is because they've got the unusual skirmisher rules, they're taking up more room. You have less flexibility than you did before on where you put them.
If could you still use them as a 1 point tougher to shoot the guys behind them screen, one row of them to start in the beginning of the game,
mm-hmm.
then as I move in, I could put them into a couple ranks of five. I'm only going to run 10 of them anyway. They're not going to break ranks.
Yeah.
I'm going to run as many as I did before. I'm just going to start off with them as a screen, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Move them forward as quick as I can. Dude, they're initiative 6 with 2 attacks apiece.
They've always had just a little bit more than I...
And the great thing is when I start off with them 10 across, as long as they don't move too far, I can move them up.
Yeah,
and pull
as long
the guys
as the
in.
Model itself doesn't move more than double.
So my first unit, I look, okay, is he running a horde? Maybe I just keep him straight across. Is he not running a horde? Is he running 5? They're 25-millimeter bases, so I'm running 5 or 6 or 7. I'm looking at you and deciding, how can I go a little bit wider than you? So that way when we do hit, I'm getting the maximum number of attacks in. So I hit the table again, and the microphone's on there. I keep doing
that.
Don't
worry about it. So the real question now becomes, is as little as I enjoy the new terrain rules, when they come into play, and I'll just, I guess, have to suffer through it, how does that affect the Wood Elves?
Well,
do they have to like? Oh, we. It turns out this entire time we were living in a blood forest. Oops.
Well, and that's the thing. There are forest walkers, which is whatever's going to be that new rule. The striders, they're going to be all forest striders. You know that. I'm wondering if there's going to be something special that they get to. In fact, I put that up on the Facebook. I think the perfect thing is when they go in, they get to choose because they know the forest that well. They know what it is. Or when they go in, they can just choose to have it be normal.
I would think that makes more sense.
Yeah, if they roll it up and they don't like what it is, they can say, no, it's just a normal forest. We know this. We know this place too well. I think that would... Because if everybody can be running through it, the only thing you're not going to see is I think they're going to have that that their horses and stuff don't take dangerous terrain tests in the forest. They're going to be forest riders, whatever. They're going to be able to move through without any
dangerous terrain tests. I have a weakness of knowledge on Wood Elves. Did your cavalry... Go through every model. Then they'll probably change. I mean, that makes more sense then.
Yeah, because in fact, here in the book right here, there's the three things that all they have. Wood Elf longbows do not suffer the -1 to hit penalty for move and shoot. They can move, except flyers, using their flying movement. All models may ignore movement penalties for moving through woods. And then there's the woodland ambush. You get the extra piece of terrain. So that's the Wood Elves. Tree men, of course, I still can't see not taking a tree man. But what I like now is, if I want, I can make the tree man my general. But I don't have, I could, and I could still take.
How much is a tree man ancient?
He's 3 1/4.
So you cannot realistically afford to take that and another lord.
If I do that, I could do a tree man ancient and say a wood elf highborn.
But
maybe
really does give you new options because almost. In a tournament, you're going to see a treeman agent. I can't see anyone taking anything else. You're going to see it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a real question. If I decide not to go the ancient route, I can take a lord and a wizard.
But that's still... The pair of them coming in naked is 360 points, so you're not going to be able to jack them up that much.
You won't be able to jack them up that much, but you can still afford to do it. 460 if one of them gets maximum 100 points of items... And then
if I was doing something where I was trying to play a softer list, though...
But bear in mind, also, that wizard, you're not going to see double up on dispel scrolls anymore. So no more scroll caddies. So you don't have 50 points automatically locked down in scrolls.
That's true. Well, I mean, they have those alternate scrolls that you can take.
Yeah.
But I could see taking... In fact, one of the things I'd like to see is be able to take a highborn and a highborn... Two highborns.
Mm-hmm.
Two
mm-hmm.
lords. Make one of them my altar... Noble, so he could take the better combos.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because I like him with the shoot as many times as you have attacks, and then you put the...
They have 4 attacks like normal, right?
Well, when he becomes an Alter Noble, he gets +1 attack.
So 5.
Yeah. So he gets to shoot 5 times, and if you have those Arcane Bodkins, they ignore armor saves. Which is how I have him fly in and go... And he takes out a crap load of those...
So you'll probably see that.
A lot of people don't do it. I don't know if I'm doing it wrong or something, a lot of people will take that. They'll take the Hail of Doom arrow instead.
That you're going to see in every tournament regardless.
That's
going to
show up, yeah.
That's not going to change. Because that's
a lot of people take an Alter Hero, an Alter Kindred Hero level.
Yeah.
But the Highborn gets more points, which allows you to do those couple of different combos that I like.
Okay.
You know,
well, I'd say the Hail of Doom is like a... As other podcasts put it, they call that a 1+. You're going to see it in every army.
Oh, yeah. Tree man, I mean, eagles, they're 50 points. I can have 2. That's the most I can have because they're not a 2-for-1 choice for me. I couldn't see not taking 2, just have them flying around as a distraction, if nothing else.
Yeah.
You know, draw fire. So that's what I think for them. I think they're going to be pretty good. Like I said, we need to see how forest moving works. Oh, you grab the next
book.
That's
fine. Yeah, go for it.
High Elves.
Okay, so I think that they're going to stay about the same in the tournament setting. I don't think they're going to go up. I don't think they're going to go down. They've changed. They're a little bit more like Dark Elves, so you can play slightly more aggressively with them. But the fact is they're expensive, and the fact that you cannot wipe out the front rank anymore means that you're going to get hit back. When you get hit back, unless you've caused a lot more damage than they've caused to you, you're losing in points. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think they're tough. I think they're effective, but you're going to have to play them just as cagey as you ever did. A couple of things have gone down in effectiveness. The not the Executioners. What are they called? Swordmasters. I'm a Dark Elf player. Swordmasters and the Lion Warriors. They're not as good as they used to be. That's just how it is. They no longer have always strikes first. However, the rest of the army effectively just gained hatred. Very powerful stuff. So, other than that...
Well, plus they have the Phoenix Guard. Okay, now, the thing is, the Swordmasters, the White Lions, and the Phoenix are all the same point cost. They're all 15 points.
Phoenix, I think you're going to see a lot more of because of that ward save.
The Hand Weapon, the Heavy Armor, the Halberd.
Mm-hmm.
They have to take the Halberd then, wouldn't they? Yes.
Always, always. The rule in 8th edition is if you have a special weapon, put special in either italicized or quotes or what have you. Special means not a hand weapon. So a Halberd, great weapon. An additional hand weapon. Anything like that.
Their weapon skill is 5. Their initiative is 6. It's higher than a Swordmaster or a White Lion.
Well, they're going to go first. They're going to...
The Halberd is both hands, but it's not an always strikes last, is it?
No. It's just +1 to strength, but both hands.
So these are the guys who they cause fear.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to strike first.
Yep.
They'll probably re-roll their to-hit rolls because their initiative's 6.
Very good that they're going
to
re-roll.
See, those are the guys I'm throwing my dryads against and praying to God because they have the same initiative. At least, so they don't get the rerolls on the dice, the misses.
That's a pretty good match for the Dryads because they're immune to that fear since they cause
fear. And the weapon skill's equal, so they're both hitting on 4s.
Weapon skill 5 for both?
Uh-huh.
Initiative is the same.
I think so, yeah.
The
And I get double attacks.
They're going to go first, but...
I'm going to get double attacks.
Yes, you will.
Well, not double attacks, but I get 2 attacks in the front naturally.
So you will still get your 4 spirit save because they are not magic attacks.
That too, but the Phoenix Guard. I'd be taking more. I'm looking at the Phoenix Guard, especially with the ward save.
Phoenix Guard, you take a big block of 20 because you're counting on them to be. I think they're stubborn too, right?
No,
they're not stubborn. Who's stubborn?
They cause fear. The Lions are stubborn.
Oh,
you either get the Swordmasters with the +1 weapon skill and the extra attack, or you take the Swordmasters who have a strength of 4 instead of 3, and they're stubborn. You're strong and stubborn. Or better weapon skill, more attacks.
Of the combination, I'd probably be going more of the Phoenix Guard route these days. The causing fear is nice.
The ward save
is great, and they're not that expensive compared to the rest.
They cost the same, and you're not getting the extra strength of the Lions or the extra attacks of the Swordmasters. But they've got a leadership 9, which is 1 higher than the other guys,
mm-hmm.
and they got a higher initiative. And they got that ward save, and they cause fear.
And you can still take a magic standard.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Something else to point out with the High Elves is
that... Can you take a magic standard? Yes, they...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dragons are going to be a little rarer than they used to be, because as much fun as it is to put your lord on the back of a dragon, it's not practical in most of those... You know, you've only got about, like, in a 2,000-point game, you've got 500 points total to put on your lord. If you do a lord on the back of a dragon, he has to be naked.
Well, do you want to jump to... Because we had this discussion while the girls were playing at Burger King.
Well, but my point is that with the High Elves, you can afford to take a cheaper dragon and still kit him out. And a dragon's a dragon. He's still pretty good.
Yeah, the wimpiest dragon is still a dragon. And I wouldn't call it wimpy. But here was what I want to know. And this is what I want to see in the errata for the different books. And I kind of wish... This is the one thing I would have liked to have seen explained in the rules. Maybe I missed it, but I don't think I did. Let's grab the dwarf book really quick. The Anvil of Doom. A Rune Lord can bring into battle the Holy Anvil of Doom.
Yep.
This takes up a hero choice in addition to his Lord choice. So he is the Lord choice. The Anvil is the hero choice. The Anvil is accompanied by 2 Anvil Guards, each with the following profile. Blabble, blabble, grog, grog, grog. It says that, by the way.
Grabble, yeah.
Yes. So... If he counts as a hero choice, since there aren't choices anymore, now, they either are going to errata that... Doesn't it say that anymore? It just says that. Or are they going to say,
did those points
the anvil counts in your hero slot or your hero percentages? Which, if they do that with, because that's the same wording on the dragon,
it's not clear. That's why they should have come out with that errata. Today would have been nice, but it sounds like they're going to do it the day they release the book. I don't know.
Well, I mean, either way, that's the one thing I want to see, because that's going to tell me whether...
It's one of the questions.
Because it's
that still
are a choice.
Green.
A dragon's not cheap. If you've got 500 points to spend on heroes and you've got a 300 point dragon, you're giving up a bunch of heroes, those inexpensive sort of extra characters. And there's a trade off there. $300 points for that. Look at my dwarves. My Thane's max out at about 100 points. I can make them up to almost 150 if I really want to kit them out.
Yeah.
Runesmith starts at 70. Master Engineer, 70. Dragon Slayer, I'm not going to put anything on him. That's 50. If I wanted to, I could take 3 or 4 Dragon Slayers.
Sure.
You know, for 50 points a pop.
Mm-hmm.
Throw them around the place. If you don't actually have a Dragon or Demon Slayer in the rules, you can only have one unit of Slayers. You can only get extra units of Slayers if you have an extra Dragon Slayer or Demon Slayer. So if I wanted more than one unit, which I probably wouldn't,
mm-hmm.
but I could throw a couple of Slayers in, just stick them behind a unit, keep them almost completely shielded, see if I get them through, and then they just come up and start hacking at something. I mean, they can hold up themselves. Maybe. I'm just saying maybe. I throw a 300, even the Anvil, it's 175 points. So suddenly
so the,
I've lost.
So the question is, where do those points go? I mean, do I apply them to, you know, if in the rules you take something for a character that says takes up an extra hero slot or lord slot, where does it actually go? The Rada needs to clarify that. We don't know yet.
Yeah, I mean, they may just say, hey, just ignore that completely.
Who knows? We'll have to find out.
You know, because taking an extra 175 from your hero points, or lord points, they might say that's enough. We'll just drop the whole rule altogether.
So you got the dwarf book in your hand. My prediction is they'll go up in tournament effectivity. I think you'll see.
I don't think they're just going to be spoilers anymore.
Well, I think that's Jeff Carroll's opinion of them is that they're spoilers, and that's fine. And
I think a lot of people agree with him.
He was partially right. I think he was partially right. In 8th edition, I think that they're a player's army again, which is about time. I think that they will go up in effectivity partially because of the new rules for charging allows them to charge. Not only that, but I think that you can now take advantage of your miners and rangers in a way that you couldn't before. One of the very first games that you and I played, I believe you fielded one of the two. The problem was I didn't have anything that stayed back. Everything was charging forward in one big mass.
Well, except for you had the two bolt throwers.
I didn't have it in that game. I didn't own them yet. And that's the point, was there's nothing for you to catch up to. So you
I came
six.
In on the side.
You couldn't catch me, though.
On that one, I still couldn't catch
no,
you.
No, I mean, I was moving 10, you're moving 6. Every turn, you're getting further away.
Yeah.
So it was a waste of points. All they could do is take a table quarter. In 8th edition, you could probably catch me. And if you do, you're catching me from the flank or the rear. So I think that dwarves have some ingredients to be effective and terrifying. You don't want to get caught by them because they tend to grind down. They tend to win protracted combats. They've taken a hit on the hand weapon and shield.
Yeah.
And they've taken a hit on...
so their armor save in close combat... Their armor save, if you take that hand weapon shield, I mean, basically, their armor save for shooting is going to stay the same.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not going to get the one better for close combat.
True.
But they get that ward save that they really didn't have before, the 6-up ward save.
Yeah, you've got the parry save, which
so
you're is
getting
different.
Second, you're getting, but I'm getting that second save, at least, it's that ditch.
It's there.
Yeah.
It's there. The parry save and the special rule.
It's just
the special weapon rule, I think, affects you negatively
but,
a little bit. But
I mean, they're just basically hand weapon, heavy armor. They're 8 points. If I throw the shield on them, they're 9. I'm not going to go hoard with this.
You cannot afford to.
There's
no such thing as a cheap dwarf. As I play Chaos
I mean, if
dwarfs.
You were a spearman at 9 points, I could see it, because you go horde, you get that third row of attacks, and they already... I mean, spears are getting... I mean,
well,
they've already...
That's Harrison's high elves, but even there, I don't think he can afford to take his spearman in a horde formation. That's too expensive.
But, I mean, that's the one thing I see with these guys is I don't see that the unit size are going to be able to change that much. There's one thing we didn't notice earlier is that, remember we said that only the Quarrelers, if you make the Quarrelers Rangers,
mm-hmm.
that they had the, you can't make Thunderers.
No, you cannot.
So it's either Quarrelers, Dwarfs, or Longbeards.
Right.
And, but the Warriors or Longbeards can get throwing axes for one extra point.
Yep.
So, I mean, it still costs a little bit more than the Quarrelers, and they're just...
That's actually a viable choice, especially in 8th, because, thrown weapons like that, well, I think even in 7th, there's no penalty for moving and shooting...
Which the Quarrelers do have. You almost maybe that's it. Longbeards with throwing axes might be a better...
Yeah, but you're going to have a really terrible range on him, like range 8. But if you're already right there, then who cares?
Yeah, well, I'm starting 12 inches away from you. I don't have to be undercover anymore. I just have to be 12 inches away.
That's right.
You move, I got you. You don't move, I can still move and shoot. If I can move and throw without the penalty anymore, then I'll move forward, throw them. You know, I mean, that. Hopefully. But special units... I don't know. I think that's the one place that suddenly I've got choices, because before I was always hampered by I only got four choices. And if I had a Lord, I put him in a unit of hammers. I don't care. I take a cannon. That's two. If I want to get some miners to come up, because they're really great to have guys coming up in the back, that's three.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if, then I've got Slayers. Bolt throwers are a two for one choice.
You're going to continue to take bolt throwers, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm saying now I've got a percentage that I can use. I think this is going to help dwarves and orcs and goblins a lot.
Let's jump into the orcs
because
and goblins.
Because of the slots.
Yeah,
as far as rare units go, here's the deal. I always take a gyrocopter because I love the gyrocopter. I love driving around and flaming onto things. If that counts as a breath weapon, it's only one shot per game. I don't see myself taking it anymore.
Agreed. If they did, and I don't know what direction Games Workshop they might put into the fluff. It only has steam enough for one shot per battle. If they do, I agree with you. It may not be worth taking it anymore. But we'll find out. However, it does more damage than that one hit because it's hitting twice as many units.
Yeah, yeah.
So, depends on how much damage you can do in one go. So in the Orcs and Goblins, again, I think that they're going to improve. Animosity is still a problem no matter what. But Animosity in 7th is just not... It wasn't the same as Animosity in 6th. In 6th edition, Animosity was just negative. In 7th, it's potentially positive.
Potentially, but I mean, even then, sometimes I don't want to go rushing forward at the guys. Yeah. Hey, stay here!
But that's the problem with Orcs and Goblins. But I mean, you're going to be... The things that you did in 7th edition now have additional positive rules in 8th. You took... Goblins in units of 40, practically. Now you're getting better rules for it.
But now my Black Orc War Boss... Well, you can take an Orc War Boss. The leadership doesn't change.
The
Although Black Orc gets the better armor.
Yeah.
But the War Boss on a Wyvern, making his leadership of 9 go 18 inches...
I don't ever see an Orc and Goblin player not fielding a Black Orc Lord... I think it's going to be in every army. The difference now is you can afford probably to take something else, too, in the Lord slot. And you're going to see...
Well, with the Wyvern, I'm not even looking to take any more. I'm looking to take a couple of from the heroes. I'm going to take some magic users, because they've got crazy magic as it is.
Oh, yeah. I'd say the first time you see one of those Bring the Cheese tournaments...
Uh-huh.
...in the Lord slot, or excuse me, in the hero slot, mm-hmm. you're going to see like a dozen... Goblin wizards.
Oh, and I'm telling you, I'm going to have my orc shaman like I did before. I'm going to have my orc shaman in a unit. I'm not going to trade off for the fireball because I'm going to have him with that war paint.
You can't take fireball.
Well, they got some sort of a... I mean,
you're talking about the green equivalent. The green equivalent.
Yeah, I'm not going to take the magic missile. I'm going to take... Yeah, the gaze of Gork and the gaze of Mork.
Yeah.
I won't take that for him because I got the paint on him that gives him a +2 to all his casting when he's in combat.
Yeah.
Plus, he's a level 1 for 70 points, a level 2 for 105. So for 105 points, I've got a shaman who is, once I get him into combat, is casting with a level 4. And, you know, I'm going to throw him into a unit of something that's got a lot of stuff so I can sort of kind of keep him safe. Or also, like I did before, throw him on a boar with the unit of boar boys. He did pretty good then. Get him stuck into combat, slamming something that's smaller. He starts throwing magic around, get a bonus, break them and make a, if you know, if it's something small, you can usually break them, make them run. If not, hopefully, as long as you're not getting flanked. I mean, I like that, and now I can put a couple of these guys, plus the little, I mean, the spells of the little wog are awesome.
They're just as effective in many ways. That's why I think you're going to see a handful of goblin wizards. Cheap, plentiful.
Level 1 Night Goblin Shaman is 50 points.
Yeah, so if we're talking that means you can afford to take 10 if they're naked.
Well,
I don't think
yeah.
you're going to see that, but that's my extreme point, is that you can afford to take 10
I can take,
in a 2,000-point game.
Well, you only get 12 dice plus the channeled, you know, or 12, up to 12 dice. I could see taking 4.
Well, yes, you're absolutely right. But
you could take 10, you're right.
We don't even know realistically what the spells are going to be like in 8th, because the errata needs to clarify. Will you have a signature spell? Is there a lore attribute bonus?
Right, and that's what we're waiting for, all of that. Someone said the arrow boys they thought were viable.
I suppose so. I don't normally rate orc archers, because the fact that you have animosity means you can't rely on being able to shoot effectively every turn.
Right.
And that was my experience when I played my Chaos Dwarves. I have the Hobgoblins, which are frankly the same thing. Same
but now
concept.
I've got leadership. Oh, it's animosity. It's not
it's
leadership.
It's animosity, not leadership, so you can't re-roll it with the BSB. So the problem is still there.
Yeah.
On a 1 or a 6, you've... On a 1, you can't shoot at all. On a 6, for animosity, you move, so you're minus 1 to shoot.
Right.
So it's
yeah, ballistic skill 3, light armor, choppa, and a bow. I could see where someone would say they'd rather take these guys because they are the toughness 4, and they have light armor, choppa, so at least they get a plus 1.
You can take a big block of them and actually expect them to fight. And you, with the volley fire rules, you can take a lot of them and actually get some shots off. You know, quantity over quality.
A unit of 20. You're shooting with the first two rows, 10 shots, plus
and 3 and 3.
3 and 3 in the back. So, yeah, a volley wouldn't hurt. And then when someone gets close, you just charge in.
Not a bad strategy.
You know?
Again, I don't necessarily,
I mean, it's more
like...
expensive than the orc boys. And for the orc boys, actually, for the same points... They don't have the bow, but they've got the shield, which, you know, I know they're orcs. I just hate, what am I saying? I hate throwing things in there naked, and then I always take slayers, so.
Well, here's the thing, and this also applies across the board, but with your orcs, you can really benefit. And I think this works for most armies in 8th edition. I'm a big proponent right now of two hand weapons, not two-handed, but two, you know, an additional hand weapon by getting that front rank with two attacks instead of one. Since you're removing casualties strictly from the back, the last models to be removed are your additional hand weapon attacks. So, to me, that seems like the way to go.
Right.
Drop the shield, get the additional attacks. You're going to be taking more casualties, but hopefully you're causing twice as many back to your opponent. And I think orcs especially benefit because they're naturally high toughness. It means they'll be taking less casualties anyway.
Yeah, and then your special units, once again, being able to go from 4 units on a 2,000-point game to 500... Or no, up to 50%, right?
Are you talking about special units?
Yeah.
Yep.
So up to 1,000 points, which you wouldn't have the whole 1,000, but even if you only take 2 or 3. Okay, so I got 2-for-1 choice, so I take a Spear Chukka. That's still a grand total of 70 points. I'm not going to take 4 Spear Chukkas, because I don't own 4 Spear Chukkas. But I take 2, it's a grand total of 70 points. I throw in a Bully, it becomes 80 points. So there's 80 points of my specials. You can throw in a Rock Lobber. That's another 70 points. That
would have been a rock.
That's two choices. But then I'm saying, so... I have my unit of Black Orcs, so that's 3 choices. Before, I'd have to pick one more thing and be done. Do I want some Boar Boys? Do I want a Chariot? Do I want some Squig Hoppers or a Squig Herd? Dude, for, what, 60 points a piece, I could have a little unit of 10 Squig Hoppers and Squig Herds. You can take up to 3 of them, right?
Yep.
So if I could take up to 3 special units at 60 points a piece, that's 180 for 3 of these little 10-man unit of Squig Herds. And if the Herders die, they just, boom, blow up and do... D6 strength 5 hits to the enemy. Anyway, I mean, like nearby or whatever it is. That's what they do.
If you were going to be building a...
you can use them as a squig bombs.
If you're going to be building an Orc and Goblin tournament army, do you see yourself using the Wyvern more or less often now?
At least for now, I got to take the Wyvern.
Take the Wyvern?
It gives them that 18-inch range. The Trolls. Go from using a 4-liter ship to a 9-liter ship. I'll be taking Trolls.
You'd be taking the Wyvern. Now that the initiative plays a bigger part of it, are you going to be taking... Now, which one of the goblins gets the initiative 3? Is that the Night Goblins?
The Night Goblin gets
them. They're like twice as good now. You get the phonetics and you get the initiative bonus.
Or no, wait, maybe they have the lower. I don't know. Let me double check. I get confused.
Maybe
I'm old.
Two. Which one is
Night Goblins have initiative 3.
But leadership 5. Where regular goblins leadership... have a 6, but initiative 2.
Leadership 6, initiative 2 for the regular goblins.
But with the Wyvern, yeah, it seems to me that, like, Night Goblins are twice the way to go now.
Yeah, because they have the higher initiative and they can use the...
Fanatics.
The leadership of the general once again. Well, the other ones can too, but they've got a lower initiative.
Yep.
Their higher initiative, I mean, their higher leadership is great if they're not near the general.
So.
But he's got a lot of room. Okay, what have we handed me? Warriors of Chaos. I don't know.
More viable, I'd say they're about the same, but a little more viable than they used to be because you get into combat a little faster. once you get locked into combat with Chaos Warriors,
their lords are still really expensive. And I know they come tricked out already. I mean, their Sorcerer Lords have great armor saves and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But for lords, you're looking at 210 for a lord and 235 for a Sorcerer Lord.
Yeah, you don't quite have the flexibility on the lord side because they're so expensive.
I mean, hero's not much different, though. A Sorcerer is 85 for level 1.
One of the most common things you'd see in a Chaos Warrior army, or Chaos Mortals, however you want to call it, was the lord in the back of a two-headed dragon. The Chaos Dragon,
right?
I don't think you can afford it anymore in a 2000, even a 2250. You can't afford it. So
Chaos Dragon is 360.
Yeah, plus
add that to his 235. That's 595 points, which is
outside of the 2250 range. So it's not even a choice. You can't go that route anymore. You won't see it
unless it counts as a hero. In which case, you can see it, but you're not going to see at 360 points. You might have a level 1 wizard or a very shabbily dressed exalted hero.
So I'm not sure which way GW is going to go, but I don't think that they're going to make that choice. Only count for hero, but not for lord. If it's on the back of the lord and it's a lord model,
I think honestly, I'm kind of thinking they might decide to go and say, if it says it counts as a hero, you count on the hero points, because they want people to take those lords. They want people to buy those dragons. They want people to be fielding that stuff. Well, and I'm not saying it's a money issue. I'm saying that but think about it. If you do that, like I said on this, you've taken away a huge chunk of your availability of heroes. I mean, you're down to maybe, you have one hero choice left.
The hot rumor right now is that they're intending to do to Fantasy what they did to 40K, and that is include, create new rules for apocalyptic scale.
Uh-huh.
So, like, in 40K, you'll see those walking titans and the gargants and things right. Like that, and Stompas. They want to do that for Fantasy with, like, big, giant, hulking monsters. So, dragons would be certainly included, which implies that they'll come up with a special scenario to allow people to take their dragons again. But in this version of it, I think that they're trying to get the emphasis back in infantry.
It's possible, but I'm just saying, I would let it in there just to make sure, because, yeah, they're trying to get the focus on infantry, but by allowing you 25% heroes and 25% lords, they're not fooling anybody that you could really just take a whole bunch of these guys if you wanted to. A lot of different guys with different powers. But if you want to take that dragon, if you're a guy who's like, damn it, I want my dragon, yes, okay, you can have it. But that's what you're getting. That's leaking over into your hero choices. That's sucking away percentage from two pots now. See what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You might be willing to say, okay, I'm going to spend everything on this one lord. I normally only got one lord anyway. So I'll put this lord on a dragon. That was all I got. Usually I had some points left, you know, that I could have gone.
You know, the funny thing is, though, everything in Fantasy just became more like a glass cannon. You can take anything you want, but any strength can hit anything and wound anything.
Exactly.
So even if you do put him in the back of a glass, a Chaos Dragon, it can be killed.
Chaos Warriors are still 15 points.
You'll see more Marauders. I mean, the Warriors are good and they can actually get into combat now, but I think Marauders just became more effective than they were before because you can afford...
Their initiative is 4.
Initiative 4, Weapon Skill 4, and they're 4 points apiece. You're going to be seeing tons of them in big, big, big horde blocks.
No, it doesn't say they can take additional hand weapon.
That's okay.
They can have great weapons, flails, but even if you give them light armor and a shield, suddenly they've got a 5-up armor save and a 6-up ward.
Yep.
Without a mark.
Yep.
And you can give them a mark that'll give them a ward.
How about Frenzy? Yeah.
Or even Frenzy. So, and that's 6 points a model.
The Mark of Khorne, I think, is Frenzy, right?
Right.
So that's the direction I might consider going.
Yeah, or like I said, if you wanted to go and protect them, you could make Tzeentch.
Is that the ward save?
Tzeentch gives them the ward save, so then they'd have a 5-up, instead of a 6-up, they'd have a 5-up ward save. And
but then you would not want to give them shields, because they don't stack that way. It's something to consider, you're right. But the parry save doesn't stack. If you've got a better ward save, you're taking that, and then it becomes a wash.
Oh, okay.
So
I must have missed... you know, I get confused
the only
about
ward
that.
Saves, the only ward saves that might stack is if you have a ward save, and then you have magic resistance. That stacks, but it's a little confusing. But
Warhounds,
whatever.
They cause panic. They don't count towards your 25% minimum of core.
If anything, they got even weaker because, according to the new rules, beasts of that particular nature, those cavalry,
they're afraid of fire.
Yep, any flaming attacks cause fear to them. So
I don't see a lot of them coming in. I don't see. Like I said, once again, I'm not great with my cavalry. So, I mean, if they considered fast cav,
how many points do they model?
Six.
Well, they're cheap. You know what? If I bought a big block of them.
Six naked, yeah. I mean, you could give them a scaly skin save for a point.
I wouldn't give them a thing, but I would just... Their point is to get stuck in, lock something down for a turn, and die.
I mean, if you want to spend 90 points, you could get 15 of them, which would get ranks then, because they're not skirmishers, so you could use them as a flanker again.
I'm not worried about...
It's just, you're not going to do it for 30 points.
Just about everything in the Chaos Warrior army, though, gets to reroll a panic save.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you follow up Chaos Hounds with Chaos Knights, or even the Chaos Warriors.
Marauder Horsemen. Yeah,
something. The Marauders have a bigger threat of running, but the Chaos Knights and the Chaos Warriors don't. They still have a place. You just got to be careful with what you do with them.
What about their specials? Let's see.
Well, there's the Chosen. There's the Forsaken.
Chaos Chariot, the Ogres.
I think I'd rather take the Chosen over the Forsaken. Forsaken are those frenzied ones, D3 plus 1 attacks.
Yeah.
But they don't get a free roll on the Chaos Gifts table. Well, the Chosen do. They start the game with that, and that's pretty heavy duty.
Yeah, they're the Chosen of the Dark Gods, so they've got that Chosen, whereas the other guys only get the Will of Chaos.
Effectively, what I would say is, I mean, from 7th to 8th, not a lot of changes. You're going to see fewer dragons, the Marauders become more effective. And you actually, if you really, really have to go the Eternal Gateway, go for it, I guess.
They have trolls here for 45 points.
Chaos trolls, yeah,
they're not as strong, I think, as the other trolls, are they?
They might be. Their regeneration's a little better, if I remember right.
Strength 5, toughness 4.
Oh, I remember. They have a bizarre... if they regenerate two or more wounds at the start of a phase, they get to roll on the Chaos Gifts table.
Oh, okay.
They're good.
Yeah, mutant regeneration, fear, stupidity... Cause fear, stupidity, and troll vomit. Once again, if you keep them near your lord, they're going on a leadership 9 test for stupidity.
And the truth of the matter is, once you get them in close combat, you don't put roll on the stupidity table. You just grind away.
Knights are still kind of expensive. You're not going to see double ranks of them.
You can't afford it, but you don't need it necessarily. How many attacks do they have normally? Like 2 or 3? 3?
Knights? 2.
2 attacks? Do they frenzy?
No. They have 2 attacks, and their champion has 3, and Steel has 1. They have ensorcelled weapons, Chaos Armor, Shield, Barded Chaos Steed, the Will of Chaos, and they cause fear.
Well, they're not going anywhere. We'll see. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, now with the rares, you've got enough points where if you want to, you could take the Hell Cannon and a War Shrine, and you could still take a couple of Chaos Spawn. You get more choices in the rare once again with the options, but I don't know. There you go. What about your Lizardmen?
Lizardmen? Well, the Saurus are as good as they were before.
Okay.
And little Kira Whitek has joined the podcast. Hi, Kira.
Go on ahead. Go ahead. I've just got to open these gummy worms.
Well, okay, Lizardmen. You're still going to take a slam. If we're talking about a tournament setting, you're still going to see a slam. The difference is I can take a slam, and I might be able to still afford to take something else besides. But if I didn't take a slam, I would be taking... I can afford to take, like, 2 Old Bloods, the Saurus. Other big changes for 8th edition. And this is something I'm excited about because I just like the models. I just like the idea of them. I love the Cold Ones, which is part of the reason I like the Dark Elves so much. So in the 8th edition, what I would see happening is I'm going to be taking those Cold Ones the way I probably wouldn't in 7th because they're too unreliable with stupidity. As long as they're within that battle standard bear, being able to reroll any leadership test means that they have a really limited chance of failing.
That's true.
Leadership of 8, but on cold-blooded, re-rolled. No, they're not gonna fail.
Yeah, they're rolling 3 dice, hoping to get an 8 or less. Yeah, that's not gonna happen.
They're expensive, but not so expensive that I can't put them in 2 ranks. And since my I'm not gonna be able to get the additional attacks from the cold ones, but I will get the additional attacks from the Saurus. So it's a lot of attacks on the charge. What else? The skinks improved, which I'm flabbergasted, but they improved. The no more moving and shooting penalty from the skink javelins. And I think they didn't actually say this because they didn't talk about the blowpipes. They're not in the book. But there's a picture of the blowpipe right next to the rule easy to fire, or whatever the rule is.
Yeah, that you don't lose... you don't get -1 for stand and shoot.
Stand and shoot, or even moving and shooting.
No, I think it was just for stand and shoot.
Pretty sure,
quick to fire.
Pretty sure. Moving and shooting as well.
Oh, that's stupid.
Well, it's powerful.
That's still stupid.
Okay, stupid it is, but the thing is...
No, I'm just saying that because they're not mine.
I think they're better.
Probably.
So skink shooting has improved. The cold ones have improved, especially because of that battle standard bearer.
Mm-hmm.
I can completely trick out a Slann Mage Priest and still fit within a 2250 game.
That's true.
Well, so it hasn't negatively impacted them. And finally, Kroxigor have a new place. I mean, they were there in the 7th edition, but I think they have a better place in 8th. Stomp attack, more effective fear rules that benefit them, and monstrous infantry, monstrous supporting attacks. So that's Lizardmen. I think they've improved. They certainly haven't gotten any weaker.
All right. Demons of Chaos.
Demons of Chaos. Keeper of Secrets is now just a monster. I mean, it was a monster before. It's even more of a monster.
I think that he might outshine the Bloodthirster there.
Possibly. Possibly. Well, if they charge each other, the Keeper's going first. He's going to munch right through that armor.
He's got initiative 10 and always strikes first. Yep. So
He's going to reroll any misses.
He has one less attack, but he's got the same leadership. Same number of wounds, same strength, same toughness.
I don't know if the Keeper would survive the battle, only because I think that the Bloodthirster's attacks do D3 wounds each. So he might shout
right.
Oh,
do they?
Yeah, I think so. But as long as you're not attacking each other, in terms of charging into combat against like a block of troops, I think I'd rather have a Keeper almost.
Always strikes first and armor piercing for the Keeper, so he's also doing that. I'm just
armor piercing. You're already at strength 6.
But I'm saying it's another minus 1 to whatever. Yeah.
Basically, if you're going up against like heavily armored knights, they might be able to save on a 6, but that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, yeah, the Keeper of Secrets is insane. You can afford to take lots of heralds. I can't think of any reason why you wouldn't.
I don't see anything on the Bloodthirster that says his wounds cause D3 wounds automatically, but I could be totally wrong.
Maybe
I do see that he's got magic resistance 2.
So he's got a 5 plus ward save. Make that a 3 plus ward save because he's a demon, right? Now, does he get a ward save? He already has an armor save. Doesn't matter.
I don't know.
Doesn't matter.
I don't know. These are the guys I haven't started to play yet, so I just don't know.
I played demons in 5th edition, but a lot has changed. I don't know how much has changed. I mean, the part of the problem with demons is actually I think they're, if anything, against the wall a little tiny bit. Here's why. They're very expensive. You can't take them in giant blocks. You'll never be able to afford them in hordes. And the concept in 7th was get in, make the charge, and through your momentum, wipe out the enemy's front rank so they won't even be able to attack back.
Yeah.
They're going to be able to attack back. It's the same problem that the elves have, which is doesn't matter how many guys I wiped out. As long as there are people left, they're attacking back. Well, demons are expensive, and if they're attacking back and you only have a 5-plus ward save, you're going to lose some guys. Magic is a lot more effective than it used to be. It's practical that you can lose an entire unit.
Yeah, but for 12 points, like I said, I'm always a Nurgle fan, and you're looking at strength 4, toughness 4, mm-hmm. with a 5-up ward save.
Mm-hmm.
I'll take that.
Nurgle, sure. But Nurgle's probably not the best choice of all the different Chaos Foot Soldiers. He's more stalwart, but he's not doing more damage. He's not punching through anything with killing blow like Khorne. He's not throwing a million super high initiative attacks like Slaanesh. And, well...
Initiative... my initiative is 1.
Yeah. I mean, they're good.
I didn't see that. Well,
they're good. Nurgle's good, and the spell list is great. But, they're, you know, Nurgle demons are the ones you want to put in the front to absorb the shots.
Yeah.
I think they're against the wall. If anything, I think demons are against the wall because they're very expensive, and they're going to start to suffer because of the way combat is from now on. You're going to take more casualties in terms of points lost. I've killed 200 points worth of models. You've killed 250 because my guys are more expensive.
That's possible, yeah.
So if anything, I think demons are going to take a small hit.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's going to... Like you said, I mean, I'd like to see...
That
5 not, tiers go to 3 tiers.
Yeah, you know? I think that the demons are not benefiting from all the new magic items. So the improvements are, you know, the improvements aren't improvements for them.
Right.
Same reason for vampire counts.
Yeah, there's another army that I mean, I could be crazy. It just seems like they're going to take a hit, but I still think they're so damn powerful that the hit that they're going to take is going to make them a little more balanced.
The two of the armies that were in the top tier, the vampire counts and the demons, part of the reason they did so well is that they had answers to everything, and they were immune to psychology, and they caused fear. And fear rules were a little overpowered. Fear has now been brought back into line.
Yeah, but if you fail that fear test, man, once again, if you're not close enough to your standard bearer or your general, or your general's got a 12-inch range, he's not on a large target, I don't think I can put. I don't think I have a way to make a general a large target with my dwarves. I don't. There's not a large target to put him on, even on the two standard bearers, the shield bearers. That says he's not a large target. The only one who is freaking Thorgrim Grudgebearer on the giant throne. He's the only large target I have.
Now, did large target make it to 8th?
Oh, that's not large target, but you know what I mean. Like a monster, something to ride that's big enough to make your leadership go from 12 inches to 18 yeah. inches. I don't have anything to do that with them. And I think that, but that thing that causes fear, you fail it. You're fighting with weapon skill 1, so you're fighting as badly as their guys are.
No, that's what the demons and that's what the vampire counts need to be able to rely on. That's an interesting rule. In case you haven't listened to the first two episodes, fear is different from what it used to be. Rather than like cause automatic breaks and rather than cause people to flee, you take a fear test at every round of combat. If you win, you're fine. If you lose, if you fail your leadership test for fear, then your weapon skill becomes 1 for that round. And that means that you roll 5s to hit most things.
Right. Or even, yeah, I mean, because then even, I mean, if
except zombies, in which case you'd roll a 4.
Zombies, you roll a 4. Skeletons, you're rolling a 4. Crypt ghouls have weapon skill 3. You get reduced to weapon skill 1, you're hitting them on 5s.
Crypt ghouls, I think, you're going to be seeing more of them.
Dire wolves on 5s. I like the ghouls. Personally, I like them a lot. They get 2 attacks.
I like them, but for some reason, I like skeletons, which is why I'm going to go Tomb Kings.
Yeah, well, they have... Yeah, but I just... They're poisoned attacks, and they get 2 attacks.
But they're more expensive, right?
Yeah. No, they're the same cost as skeletons. Skeletons and crypt ghouls are both 8 points apiece.
Then why would you take...
Cripples.
Oh, because the other one takes armor, and then you can have weapon options, right?
Yes. Okay. I mean, these guys, other guys are naked, but they just come flying in. They're like game maniacs. I think what you're going to see is you're going to see people taking... I mean, vampires are 100 points, but you can get 2 necromancers for 110 points.
I think that's part of their charm now is in 8th edition, you can really have a lot of necromancers. You can take a lot of different choices, whereas before it's like, I have to take this vampire, and then I've got to take these vampires in order for my... army to march across.
Yeah, where's their... I'm looking for their magic list in here.
The magic of the vampires?
Yeah.
Well, that's another important thing, is that your necromancers can buy the spell they want, so you're not going to...
Yeah, they start off with 1, and then you can buy them for 15 points. So, you start off as a level 1, Invocation of Nahek. Now, I mean, I'm assuming is going to be the signature spell that you can always default to. So that's the one you can be spam casting.
Oh, I think you're right.
And you're going to, you know, Necromancer, 55-point Necromancer knows one of these. You just pick one.
No, what's the casting level of that? 3?
4.
4. So he's level 1, so you roll a 3
or better.
He
needs a 3 or better. And you know, a 1 or a 2 is always going to fail anyway.
There's almost no reason why not just to commit 1 die, since mm-hmm. it's the only spell. He's either going to cast it or not.
And if you want to spend the 15 to buy him, like, Raise Dead, then he can... start a new unit of zombies on a 5-up. And then there's the other necromancy spell is Von Hell's Dance Macabre. And that allows them to move again or get extra attacks in the close combat phase. No, always strike first and may reroll missed hit rolls. But he doesn't need that stuff so much. If you've got him just keep making more, I mean, they're just cheap. And you can bring them in with... Those are the three real spells that really vampire counts seem to completely rely on.
So the nerfs, then, you think that the fear rules have made them a little weaker than they used to be. However, because of the way that the 8th edition Lords and Heroes can be bought, you think the fact that you can take these extra cheap levels is a new way of playing the game that gives you some new advantages.
Right. I mean, because you only get up to 12 dice, but they're each considered a level 1 wizard. So they each get to roll a die to channel.
That's right.
So they may get some extra dice there. Sorry, it's on the table. And they're just dirt cheap. You can get 2 of them for the cost of a vampire. And, you know, you're already going to bring in... I mean, I'm already going to bring in a corpse cart anyway, so I might as well just put him on it.
Is that a bound spell?
Corpse cart has a bound spell on it.
Okay.
Corpse card.
Interesting thought here is that in most tournament settings in 7th edition, you're going to see almost every army have like a... Or half the armies have Crown of Command. That's the one that gives the weapon skill of the vampire.
The weapon skill hat,
to everything within like 12 inches, right?
No, you pick a unit in combat and... here, what is the weapon
skill? As long as you're not in combat, you can give your weapon skill, but you can pass it from combat to combat. So
yes.
Everything can have a weapon skill of 7.
It's I don't know if you can pass it during the same...
But it's less useful than it used to be. It doesn't have perfect synergy if you've already going to be causing a fear test that potentially brings your opponent's weapon skill to 1. Who cares? If they've got a 1 and you've got a 3?
Okay, yeah. So if the wearer is not in combat, one friendly undead unit within 12 inches, not their mounts, may use his weapon skill. The thing is, if you can charge in, if you do the combat with him first, he gets his weapon skill, his attacks, all his stuff. Mm-hmm. If he can break that unit and he's no longer in combat, then when the next unit goes into combat, he's out of combat. He can use the weapon skill hat.
True.
So that's kind of what you want to try to use that for if you can. But yeah, if the fear tests are failed, then it doesn't even matter.
What do we got?
Bretonnia.
Okay. Well, this is an army I like to play. Right now, I was sort of hoping that I'd have the red on my hand so I can talk about... I think that these guys are going to be under the gun a little tiny bit. You disagree with me. My argument here is that because of the number of terrain pieces on the table, my knights are less effective. Because... if I'm going by the new rules, if each piece of terrain has potential threat, if there's a 1/3 chance of me taking damage if I go through terrain, not to mention that there are...
1 in 6.
Okay,
so... and only for the units that cross through, so if...
so
that was in a picture.
So I've got a 1 in 6 of being hurt by the terrain itself if I go through, let's say, a forest. And not to mention a cavalry, I'm going to be taking a dangerous terrain test by going through forest. There's...
well, that is the 1 in 6 chance of taking the wound, is the dangerous terrain test.
Not including the rules for the forest themselves.
Of their funky forest, yes.
1/3 chance of them being negative.
Yeah, but some of that's only if you're being attacked while you're in it and stuff like that. I wouldn't count that offhand. I'm saying if you're just charging... all I'm saying is if you're charging through it...
look at it from my point of view.
Mm-hmm.
I need to probably... the smart thing to do is to plan to go around those forests.
Yes.
Because going through them is dangerous and they're extremely expensive.
Yeah, and like I said, I still think it's 6 of 1, half a dozen of the other. I'm saying before, if you wanted to go through the forest, if I could get you to chase my wood elves and you couldn't, and wheeling would bring more models into combat, I just slowed you down. I could stop your charge completely with the slowdown. Now, if you want to make that charge, you can come plowing right through
you
it.
Need,
if you want
you need
to, take
to play
a
game with the Bretonnians. I'm going to have D6 plus 4 pieces of terrain on the table. They're under the gun. I have to maneuver around them safely, or I'm taking tests and taking casualties. Not a smart way to play. They're under the gun. I don't see them playing as well as they used to. They're going to go down in tier. The Bretonnian Knights, I don't think, are as effective. The big loss for them is they no longer have the 360 line of sight, so they're no longer... I can no longer charge in any direction, because that's the way skirmishers work. Skirmishers now have flanks and rear. They don't see 360.
Right.
They're too expensive for what they do. My knights are no longer going to have that guaranteed 24-inch diameter of safety in the middle of the table, because terrain's going to be cluttering everywhere. So I don't know how I'm going to charge through.
I think you're going to see more mounted yeomen.
You see lots of mounted yeomen anyway. In every tournament army, you're going to see mounted yeomen.
I just think, yes, there's a danger to it, but I think there's also some of the benefit you get a better chance at your charge
happening. My peasants will do better, but since this army's strength is in its cavalry and 8th edition is 4 infantry, the Bretonnians will go down. That's my prediction. I'll still play them. I don't know how I'm going to win with them right away. I'll need to think about it. You'll see.
I think you're going to see some errata or something come that's going to keep that from happening.
I hope so. My guess is what would make sense is that there was a rule in the main book called like a thunderous charge or amazing charge or amazing horse or something. I don't remember.
Amazing horse.
You know, whatever it is, where it's like maybe they'll get +1 attack, but because of the rules for the Bretonnian lance, don't have perfect synergy with the new rules for it's sort of overlapping. My Bretonnian lance is no longer the advantage it used to be.
I'm just saying. I think there's some sort of a trade off. And yes, it sucks that that's going to happen.
On the flip
but
side,
I think that I'm just saying. Acknowledge that there are. It does make a couple of things a little easier if you're willing to take the risk. Before you could go through it, if you had to, and you wouldn't get hurt.
I don't.
But
know.
You'd never make it through it because you'd be going at half speed.
I won't agree. I disagree. But. You're saying it's easier to go through. I can draw a straight line and just do it.
If
but
you need
I'm
to.
Taking the risk of death. I'm not sure that's a great risk.
you're going through, and if five guys roll through, the odds are you might lose one.
If I've got a lance of nine guys, the odds are one and possibly two guys are going to be dead before.
There's a 1 in 6 chance, and I'm just saying, I'm not talking going charging right through the middle of it. I'm saying like you're skirting it and saying you got like if I'm just going to hit like the left, you know, I got them three across. The left three guys are going to go and have to roll for it. I'm going to take that risk. Whereas before, if it was the long side of a forest, I was having to wheel around and
move. I'll challenge you because you're the kind of player who says I don't like taking magic because it's too risky, but you're willing to just arbitrarily lose guys for a charge. Doesn't make sense.
I'm saying that I've watched people sitting in this room, people talking to this microphone,
mm-hmm.
get stuck in a forest for a whole freaking game.
That was the one game when I didn't have any good place to put them. You're right, my hobgoblins, I got stuck in a forest.
But if I was able to get that lance, if my wood elves were able to get that lance to fail the charge there in the forest, then they would have to move at regular speed, which granted is 8, but then they got to go at half speed. They can't march. Now they're moving 4 inches trying to get out of this forest. I just stuck that lance in that forest for at least a turn, possibly 2. See what I'm saying? Whereas now that's never going to happen. Yes, there's a risk that you're going to lose of those 3 or 4 guys. I wouldn't charge them headlong the long way into a forest where all 12 of these guys in a row are going to have to take a test. But if it's a choice between me not getting this charge off and me rolling 4 dice and removing a guy if I hit a 6.
Okay, well,
that's what I'm saying. So yes, I admit it's a...
We disagree. My prediction is my cavalry is taking a big hit. My infantry is getting a little better. On the positive side, I have access to life beasts, and if I take a level 4 heavens, and for the first time I can very reasonably say, oh, I can probably actually take not only my lord, my Bretonian lord, I can also take my level 4 wizard in the same game.
And the lore of life is pretty cool.
Lore of life got a big improvement, and if I take the level 4, that means I actually have access to the lore of heavens again in Bretonia.
Errata might give you a new Bretonian lore.
Lady of the Lake lore. Some people have too much time on their hands.
I'm sorry. I'm beating a dead horse. Totally.
No. Anyway, so
it's
that's
just too funny.
That's what I think. The improvement is my magic phase will improve. Yeah. My access to my characters will improve, and I still have one more character than other people, which I will take advantage of.
I'm not disagreeing on any particular point. Yes, it is a huge risk for expensive models, but before, you would never even say, you'd be like, I have to figure a way to go around. I have to avoid this. If it's coming down to that, look, I need these points in the last turn. I'm willing to gamble 30, 40 points because on the odds that I lose one in the hopes that I can bust that whole unit, break it, flee it, and charge it down. I'm willing to trade that risk of a 40 points and knowing that charge is, I'm not...
For sure. But it's not something you're going to do on turn one. It's something you're going to do on turn 6.
Yes.
All right, well, we are running out of time. Let's go through the rest of these.
You want to take a quick break? We got 5 left. I got to use the restroom.
Yeah, let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back with the rest of the army books, and we'll wrap this up.
To be in England in the summertime with my love, close to the edge.
Okay, we're back. And, Tomb Kings.
Well, it's going to be a little hard to predict these guys because they've got a new army book supposedly coming out sometime this year. Slight nerf. I'll say slight nerf because the fear rules no longer benefit them the way they used to. Specifically, I'm talking about outnumbering your foe. They're still an effective army. You still have to play with them sort of stoically. You have to play kind of the same game every game. The big question is, since we have no idea how their magic has been affected for 8th edition, it's really hard to make a call on how they're going to play.
Yeah.
The entirety of the Tomb King's army has 4 spells they can cast. That's not including the bound spells and their magic items, but their Hierophants and their Lich Priests, they only have 4 spells. Will they change? Will they not change? We don't know. The fear rules are interesting, but it's more of a nerf than a benefit for them. And is Shab Ti'ar an improvement? They're a little better than they used to be.
Yeah. Yeah, your Skeleton Warriors cost as much as my dwarves at base, and they don't even have... They have a bow, but they don't have any sort of armor at all.
Yeah, they're 8 points apiece, and that's more or less naked. Bear in mind, though, that includes the rules for fear that 6th and 7th edition enjoyed, which means that if you pay enough for them and outnumber...
Well, now if you go Horde, they still get stupid amounts of attacks, I guess, but
considered unbreakable. You can rebuild them. Everything in the entire Tomb King's army is
healable.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tomb Guards, Carrion, Tomb Scoring, and Ushabti. Yeah,
Carrion in 7th edition are absolute gold. Whether or not they remain so in 8th edition, I don't exactly think so. Because in 7th edition, you could string them along in such a way, thanks to the Skirmisher rules, and you're not going to be able to do that in 8th edition.
Oh, I see.
So I think that the strategy that people like to employ in 7th edition was to string them along a certain way so that you have like a really long tail of carrion, which means that they're just within range to zap them again. Using those rules, you could make them the longest moving unit in the game. They have a flight of 20, and then you could, in the magic phase, zap them and make them move again 40 inches.
Oh, wow.
So they would be considered the fastest in the game with that magic rule.
Wow.
I don't think that they're going to be able to take advantage of that quite the way they were before.
Tomb Guard.
Tomb Guard are good. Tomb Guard are, was a killing blow, strength 4, weapon skill 3 or 4.
Oh, is that what Tomb Blades is? Yeah.
Tomb Blades is magic. Are they killing blow or not?
Weapon skill 3, ballistic skill 3. I'll take a look.
I think they're killing blow. Yeah, I'm pretty
sure.
They
gotta have something.
Yeah, they're killing blow. Ushabti are better because they're ogre sized. Carrion are good, but I don't know that they're going to be quite as good. Tomb Scorpions are gold, solid. And Bone Giants, they're okay, you know. And the Screaming Skull Catapults, I wonder if they're going to be as effective. People will probably still take them in the way that Chaos Dwarf players stoically take their Earthshakers, but I don't think that they're going to be... I don't think they're going to see the same payoff that they did before. They're the ones where if you cause a casualty, they're a stone thrower.
Mm-hmm.
You cause a casualty and they immediately take a panic test. You can pay for something called Skulls of the Foe,
right,
which means their leadership is at minus... 1 or 2. Even dwarves.
That's pretty cool.
It's great. Very scary unit. But does it? Is it going to do the same thing? Just too many questions on how they're going to work in 8th. So it's all of this is too tentative for me to say for sure. I think they're good. I think they'll take a dip until we see the new book. And the new book will probably bring them right back up to the close to the top. That's just a guess.
And I'm going to rely on your opinion for that one. Because I don't know.
Either way, I'm going to play them. I love the theme.
Never.
I love the theme.
I'm not letting you play them, just so you know.
Really? That'll be disappointing when I own the models and you don't let me play.
You can't. It's not allowed.
All right. Skaven?
God, I love these. And I'm still building Harrison so I can actually play them. But I think they're getting a boost. I don't know. They actually might kind of stay around the same. But once again, cheap the Vermin Lord, 500 points. So if you want that to be your only lord.
Yeah. I think they're getting a boost. I think that because of the Horde rules, you can actually...
yeah, Greyseers, Warlords, or not, they play Priest Chieftains.
Considering you played them in a Horde anyway, and you gain leadership bonuses based on extra ranks, now by putting them in something like a Horde formation, you're getting an additional benefit, additional attacks.
50 Clan Rats with light armor, spears, and shields.
Mm-hmm.
Is 250 points. Now, they're not all that strong, and you might say that's a lot, but they're fighting again.
Initiative 4, though. They're initiative 4.
They have initiative 4, that's true.
So you charge against
and there's
beastmen,
threes
human,
on everything
Bretonians.
Else.
You're going to wound most guys on 4s.
And they're, you get 3 ranks, right?
And they're faster than humans, too.
You get. Oh, wait, no, they get 4 ranks
four
because
ranks.
They're...
If you're talking Horde, that's 3 ranks. Spears is 4.
Yeah, we're talking about Horde. If you go on Horde, you're going 50, 10 wide, 5 rows, just mm-hmm. going create 250 points.
Yep.
Then you're getting, the first row, the second row for the spears, the mm-hmm. third row for the extra row, and the fourth row. So even if you're hitting something that you're only hitting them 7 wide, that's still 28.
Just playing with the points, if you're talking a 2250 game, Skaven, rare slots, you can take 2 Hell Pit Abominations and a Warp Lightning Cannon.
And the slaves... Not only do you get the slaves for 2 points apiece, so you can go Horde, you can go a Horde of slaves. Oh, and if you give them, spears, and you can give them spears and shields too, but they wouldn't have any, and I keep saying that, or spears and slings, because they're a half a point a model for these things.
Mm. They're so half a point a model?
Half a point for a spear, half a point for a sling, half a point for shields. 2 points for model. So, and the minimum size is 20, so they know you're just going to go, you'll just wind up doing even numbers. So you don't do a half or something stupid. But 2 points for a unit of slaves. They do wounds. If when they finally break, they just basically explode and do wounds to everyone around them because they're slaves.
That's right.
But you do that, I mean, if you don't care about the shields, you go spears and slings, you're doing, you do 50 of them, for that would be 150 points. And they're using their slings, which are the thrown weapons.
So they're going to be easy to fire. They're not going to suffer penalties either.
Yeah, and they're only weapon skill 2, ballistic skill 2, so they're not much of a chance anyway. But even if you toss that, say for 125 points, I give them spears.
But you're shooting those in supporting ranks too, so...
Yeah.
You have access to Giselles. There's possibility that that's going to get the sniper role, maybe? Who knows?
Oh, yeah. I'm just saying, that's just off the court. You can go horde with that stuff. Giant rats, I suppose. They don't count towards the minimum.
They don't count towards the minimum, but they're awfully good.
Let's see. Rat one packmaster for 5 giant rats. Everyone says that rat ogres suck, I thought. Or maybe it was giant rats that everyone says that suck. But they're super cheap. You can run roughshod over some
people. Turn the page for a second. Look at rat ogres, because we're talking about a guy that moves 6. Has an initiative of 4?
Yeah.
5?
Master bred is a 5. Regular is a 4.
So they're going to count as 40 points for ogre. They're going to count as monstrous infantry. 3 attacks. Strength 4 or 5?
Strength 5.
Weapon skill 3.
3 attacks.
Yeah, so, and they cause fear. And frenzy. Don't they have frenzy?
Yep.
Okay, they're insane.
They're on 40 mil bases.
Yeah, they're...
So what do you do with their little breeders, though?
The breeders are 20 mil bases, so I guess you'd put them in the front, on the side.
Well, no, because they would have to rank up. There's one... So if you, as long as you had an even number, because remember, as long as they're 20s, 40s can all go together. It's just 25s and 40s
can't. Can't he lead from the back?
Oh, you might put him. You know, we got to read the rules, and I wish we had the book in front of us again, about the handlers. Because I know they changed the rules. Handlers are basically, almost practically, they're just like tokens counting.
Oh, yeah. They're not actually there. They're just sort of part of the...
So I wonder if these guys count as... Because it's...
You put them on the table as markers, but they're not actually...
No more than one pack master for every 2 rat ogres. Basically, once all the pack masters are gone, the rat ogres can run wild, but you can only have...
Yeah, I heard something about that with my Hydra, too, where they're going to end up being like, you might as well put them on the base.
You know what
Hydra
you could itself. Do? You could run, if you have one guy for every 3 ogres, you could run 6 ogres, red ogres, get all those attacks.
3 and 3, yeah.
And then you just have the guys in the back, one guy for each. You'd have like 3 little handlers in the back.
Sure.
And then you're just running scads of red, 40 points a pop, but... That's still pretty cool, I guess.
The big problem I have with the Skaven book, and this is just a failing in my part, is that there are so many special rules, and the errata currently is so heavy that I can't keep up with it all.
Well, the errata now is just goofy. That's why I can't wait for the new ones to come out, to simplify. There's the game rules. Here's the rules for this stuff. You know, Plague Monks are still awesome. Plague Sensor Bearers, besides the fact that they might kill themselves, 2 attacks with Frenzy and Hatred.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they'll get those guys right up in the front. Get them attacking. Nobody's going to take... Well, you could take 2 hell pits, and then everyone would call you names. And I love the Doom Wheel too much not to take a Doom Wheel. But now you can take everything in this
list. You can take a hell pit, a Doom Wheel, and a Warp Lightning. I think you can afford it. No
almost,
problem.
Yeah. Oh, and the Plague Claw Catapult, is it? Or is it the other thing? Is supposed to be coming out in the box set.
The Mortar.
The Mortar...
We're talking about the Pit of Blood? Is that what it's called?
Island of Blood.
Island of Blood. The new box set that's going to be out in September, it's going to be a replacement for the Battle for Skull Pass. The plastic one with the High Elves and the Skaven is going to be coming out in September. You should see a plastic Griffin, a whole bunch of High Elves, a whole bunch of plastic Skaven.
Yeah, I totally forgot about that. But I want to see what the hell that looks like anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, but a Hell Pit, you could take a Doom Wheel, you could take a Warp Lightning Cannon. Oh, I think it comes with a Warp Lightning Cannon. Too.
I didn't see that, but I hope so. I hope you're right.
That would be nice to see a plastic Warp Lightning Cannon. But I love that Doom Wheel. What's next?
Well, the Dark Elves. I think I've talked about these guys till I'm blue in the face, but let's go over it one more time. What big changes? Okay, I have to play them more carefully than I used to. In 7th edition, I played them extremely aggressively. My concept was play a bit like a shark. Forward movement will save me. If I'm stuck out in the middle, I'm going to get shot to death, so my goal was to get into combat quickly, take the charge, wipe out the front rank, take no casualties, and that's how you win combats. I made my goal to win every combat in the first round. Can't do it in 8th. Maybe I can, but you're going to attack back anyway. I'm going to get a bloody nose regardless of the combat I'm in. Therefore, my small units of like 14, 15 don't exist anymore. They shouldn't, because if I lose seven guys, that's half the unit. So I'm going to go a different route. It also means that I can take different units than I used to. Spearmen and Corsairs and Witch Elves are a lot more useful than they used to be. With the combination of the Battle Standard Bearer and possibly even the General, my Cold One Riders have a reliability that they couldn't have in 7th edition.
Yeah, that's silly.
It's very good.
I mean, it's insane how... the odds of them missing that...
Well, I mean, if their leadership is 9...
you have the General and the BSB with that Cold One...
Oh, it's a 1 in 44. One chance in 144 of failing.
Because you got you basically can roll anything but an 11 or 12, and if you miss it, you get a reroll on it. The odds of you missing that are slim.
The odds are so good of passing your leadership test that I would take it to a tournament if I felt that that was necessary. I mean, I could see myself doing it, especially since, on the flip side... Black dragons are probably going to be a thing of the past in normal size games. I just can't afford it.
You didn't really think much of the executioners going getting better.
I think that they're better and worse at the same time. Here's how it works. In a charge in 7th edition, I'm going to be able to attack first. I should be able to butcher a whole bunch of people.
Mm-hmm.
I'll take limited casualties. Maybe I'll win that combat. Maybe I'll force you to run. In 8th edition, I charge into combat, and you go first. My toughness.
Your initiative 5. You're going to be
a two-handed weapon.
Is it a great weapon?
Yeah, it's a great weapon. Always strikes last.
Oh, you're right.
Therefore, you attack first. My toughness is 3, and I have an armor save of 5+.
Eternal hatred, killing blow. Ah, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
And they're 12 points a model, is it?
Yeah.
A little expensive to be buying a big block of 20, 21, 22.
Now, well, that's another one that you're going to take because, like I said, I think you're going to see a lot of units that go that...
In a for-fun game, no problem, because I think they're one of the coolest-looking models. They're a pain to put together because the swords break off, but... but in a tournament setting, who are you throwing them up against? Who's your target? Who's an appropriate target?
Anybody who's got great weapons, I think, is the one target that you can viably go in
with
a much more safe.
Don't you think that would be better just to go against, take cheap spearmen against them? I'll go first and I get a million attacks. I have just as good of a chance as anything else.
Yeah, but you get that's true. Well, you get the killing blow.
I don't know where they belong. Strength 6. If I'm struggling to think of the perfect place to put them, then maybe there's no perfect place to put them in a tournament setting.
Maybe not. But I'm saying, if I had 15, you could hold them back if you had to. Yeah, that's an expensive holdback. It's 200 points. But you bring them out at the right time. You try to, kind of keep them behind your guys so they're not getting picked off with shooting or something.
For an additional point per model, I'm going Blackguard every time.
Oh, okay.
For 2 points less, and I think they're more effective.
Hey, in a 2250 game, you could take 2 Hydras and 2 Bolt Throwers.
Sure can.
That's awesome.
I'm not going to make any friends by taking 2 Hydras, but I don't make friends by playing Dark Elves anyway. Even in 8th edition, people are going to remember what they were like in 7th edition.
Or you take 5 Bolt Throwers.
And be comped out of existence.
No Hydra, just 5 Bolt Throwers. I'm just going to shoot you.
Yeah. Man. Who's next?
Beastmen.
Dave, we were looking at this the other day when you're putting together those gores and ungores. So let's talk Minotaurs for a second. They're insane.
Everybody's talked these guys to death, but it's true. They're freaking awesome.
So, in 8th edition, if you charge a unit that has more ranks than you, you're stubborn, yes. But if Minotaurs charge you, they're going to win the combat anyway. Then they're going to get, the front rank is going to get +1 attack per model. So, how many turns do you think you can last against?
Plus, they're getting impact hits. Plus, they're getting stomp.
Well, the impact is on the charge, but they're getting stomp every turn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Minotaurs are going to chew through anything, and it doesn't matter if you outnumber them. They're going to chew through you. Gores and Ungores and Bestigores didn't look very good in 7th, but with the inclusion of the Battle Standard Bearer being able to reroll anything...
Yeah, because their leadership isn't great, but once again, if you got... Oh, you're not going to have a...
But your Primal Fury can be rerolled.
Your Primal Fury can
which
be rerolled.
Means which means you guys have a movement of 5, toughness 4, weapon skill 4 for gores.
Yeah,
And you're rerolling misses now because you effectively have hatred because you're probably going to get that
Primal Fury almost every turn if you can, yeah.
Not only that, with 8th edition, the big question of do I go the leadership 9 with the, is it the Gorbul? I forget what their terms are.
Yeah.
Well, there's like the Minotaur Lord and then there's the
The Doom Lord. Yeah, now
you can effectively take them both.
A Beast Lord and a Doom Bull?
I don't think you can take a Doom Bull and a Wizard, but you can take both the Beastman Lord and the Beastman Wizard.
You can take almost, yeah.
You can afford to take them both.
Yeah, you can afford to take
which means you've got both magic and combat. I mean, you make the lord your general, you make the wizard just there for fun, but you can take both. You've got options now that you didn't before.
Blood greed means they don't pursue as much because they want to stay and eat, right?
Right.
But you put that Gorbul in there, that hero with the slaughterer's call, and every turn that they win a combat, they get an extra attack. Mm-hmm. So that front row, they're frenzy. They're already getting four attacks up front because they have...
You can put a...
they don't have frenzy, but you put a frenzied... And once again, this is another thing that I get confused. So if I put a frenzied hero into the unit, is the unit frenzied?
Yep.
Okay, if I put a non-frenzied hero into a frenzied unit, is the hero frenzied?
Well, if you put a Minotaur character in any unit,
frenzied.
They become frenzied.
Oh, okay.
Even if they're not frenzied, they become frenzied by the rules of that character. Any Minotaur okay. that joins a unit grants frenzy, but they lose Primal Fury.
Okay.
So...
But you're looking at, I mean, if you're running even six of them, it's insane.
You're talking about the Minotaurs?
Yeah, they've got the Frenzy. So they've got, let's see, five attacks from the Gorbul, five attacks from the Champion. That's 10.
And they have
four
a better
from the Minotaur,
hit.
That's 14. So you're going to get five impact hits in the front, plus 14 attacks, plus nine from the back. And then you're going to get Stomp at the end for another three. Yeah, that's stupid. I mean, that's beautiful. I love it. I want to play something like that.
I also think that the lore, the Beastman lore of magic is more effective in 8th than it was in 7th. You've got spells that do 5d6 strength 1 hits, where in 7th edition you kind of like dismiss it. It's like, well, that can't, you know, against any toughness 4, it literally can't hurt them. Well, now any hit can wound anything in 8th. So even strength 1 hits, you throw them against a toughness 10, if you're going to wound it on a 6. You might as well throw it.
Yeah, they're still going to get a ward save, so... armor save, but...
True.
And strength 1 is not... I mean, if it's something that's got a good armor save, it's bad. If you're going up against some... And hell, we were talking, give the gores two hand weapons because they're naked and giving them a shield. I mean, it gives them a 6-up ward save in close combat.
But 5d6, if the average on 2 dice is 7, that's 7, that's 14, that's anywhere from 17 or 18 hits, right?
And then 6 is so you get 3 wounds?
Yeah, 3 wounds.
Yeah, that's still...
So I'd throw them against whatever, anything. You know what to throw against fast cavalry.
Yeah. I still don't get why you'd want to surge forward d6 plus 1 and not count it
But
as
it's only
charge.
Within 12 inches, right?
All friendly units within 6 inches.
Or 6 inches.
Immediately move forward, D6 plus 1.
My concept is because hero wizards are relatively cheap, take 3 of them all with the Lore of the Wild. By definition, you're going to take up all 6 spells, right?
Right.
The one that gets the Mantle... the Savage Dominion, the one that summons a creature.
Uh-huh.
He's going to have 2 spells, right? He's level 2.
Yeah.
So... Keep the one that's Savage Dominion. Swap out the other one for the one that allows you to surge forward, the Bestial Surge.
Uh-huh.
That way there's more synergy. The first turn of the game, you surge them forward. You keep 3 fighting units close by them and you surge them forward because they're going to want to get into combat.
And second turn, you use it to turn them into a monster.
Turn them into a monster while your guys are in combat.
This is why everyone said, why would you spend all that money on a guy who could cast a freaking 16-point spell and turn him into a monster, but you're not. You can take a level 1, and if he gets this spell, you can throw as many dice as you need at it,
so
make the spell work.
Instead of spending 200 and however 50 points on a monster, you spent 65 on a monster.
Yeah!
It's better than it used to be.
That's a cool... That is kind of cool now.
So the lore is a little better than it was. I would take it. I mean, I would consider other
the
options
The Brace Scream
well.
Is a 10-up.
And it's a breath weapon.
Yeah, I resolved to strength 3 with no armor save.
Which implies that you can use it in close combat.
Yes, if it's a breath weapon attack, breath weapon attacks. So in close combat, because it's not a magic missile, I cast it on a friendly character within 12 inches, which can be the shaman himself. 2d6 damage.
2d6 hits.
Hits.
2d6 hits.
Hits damage, what am I talking about? Traitorkin, I still love Traitorkin. That was the spell I kept saying. They need this type of a spell in their lore.
Mm-hmm.
I just love that spell.
So I think the Beastmen... I don't know where they're going to be on the tier, but they're better than they were.
Well, yeah, and 7 points to cast Vile Tide, that 5d6 strength 1 hits anyone within 24 inches. That's actually a pretty good.
It's pretty easy to cast. You're gonna throw 2 dice at just about every spell, unless you're afraid of broken concentration. What's the last one on our list here?
Ogres.
Ogres.
Last but certainly not least.
Okay, this is an obvious one. Hey, Dave, I think they're going to go way, way up in the tier.
I do too. So, I mean, no. Like I said, I'd like to see no comp this year at all. Let's learn how the books work, and then see the comp systems come in. And you know what? If they got them down to three tiers instead of the five that they're using, like with the Vampire Counts at the top,
yeah,
I would think Games Workshop had a big success, because if you don't need that many tiers, then the armies are a little more balanced. But let's face it, this Ogre Kingdoms book is the only edition of the book. Unlike the other armies, who this might be the third or fourth book for them.
Correct.
This was their first shot. I think almost everybody who doesn't have their job on the line would say, yeah, they made them really huge. They had a cool idea, and they were afraid they were going to overpower them, so they underpowered them.
It's true. I mean, because they potentially could have been over the top, and instead they decided to
and
really...
And now they're just going
to
be insanely wonderful.
Well, they're powerful now. Yes.
Yeah.
The
I'm just excited because I can actually play them.
40-millimeter monsters, 40-millimeter infantry needed their own special category, and they have it. They've got their own stomp attack at the end. They've got monstrous infantry, monstrous... supportive attacks, so a block of six or maybe seven might be the new tournament magic number, or six with a character.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, my Iron Guts. I mean, they're 40. See, they're so expensive. They're 48 points a model.
But you're spending for six or seven models what most people would be spending for 30.
Right, and they do have great weapons, so they're coming in with strength six.
And they cause fear.
And they cause fear.
And they move six, so yeah, you're
And
be
they
moving.
Have the bull charge, so they might get those impact hits.
I don't think there's anything wrong with the bull charge, and I've heard people say this before. It's like, oh, when are they going to fix that bull charge? Bear in mind that they're ogres, they don't have horns, so they need a little bit of momentum to cause an impact hit, whereas minotaurs have horns. I would think that just by merely swinging their heads, they should be...
Sure.
You know, but at the same time, you're spending less on an ogre than you would be on a minotaur.
Scrap launchers. I like the scrap launchers still. I really like Yetis. I mean, it's just that the ice weapon thing, it just seems so pointless.
Well,
when I could take some lead belchers. Lead belchers are firing weapons. They can fire in two ranks.
Oh, my God.
So now, and the unit size is only... See, the thing is, everyone's like, oh, the lead belcher's unit size is 2 to 5.
Yeah.
You can't have more than that. So you set up 3 in the front and 2 in the back.
Yeah, pretty much.
All 5 get to fire. They all get an artillery dice worth of damage.
And they're all attacking with their full attacks. Yeah, why not?
A 5-man unit, or you can run a 4-man unit if you want.
No, I guess I'd, in that case, I think I really would do the 3 and 2 because it lessens the chance of retaliatory strikes. If they have a really wide unit, you're pretty narrow. The advantage is in your court because you're getting all of your attacks. They may not get all of theirs.
Right, and you're still 120 millimeters across, so they're going to get at least...
Well, they're going to get their 5-6, you know.
Yeah, or 7. Yeah, they can get...
7? Was
no, 120 millimeters.
2, 4, 6, 7, 8. Yeah, it's 8.
They can get 8. They can get, I think, 6 with 25 millimeter bases.
So,
but still,
charge.
Ogres are going to be coming in pounding, and I'm really excited to play them. This is one of the lists I'm really writing.
It'll be the first time where I play against ogres and genuinely fear a little bit. It's like, well, like,
and I have so many novelers. I've got like 100 novelers. I'm just going to have the big little swarmy units, and they're not going to do awesome.
No, but they'll be able to slow somebody down for a turn. The horde rule means that you're going to be stubborn, and as long as your general's nearby.
And I can't take anything except a champion groin biter for 4 points. So,
well, the big question now is how will your magic phase affect you? They need to,
yeah.
So, we'll just
yeah, that them. The I mean, these guys don't even follow the normal way to cast magic. They're like the Tomb Kings.
Not at all.
Until we find out how they cast magic, I can't even comment.
I think they'll get a little revamp, but we'll find out.
All right, we've gone through all the lists, and the show is actually running longer than we wanted it to. We got a regular full-on show here.
No, we didn't talk about Chaos Doors, but you know what, folks? I don't know.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. It's going to be hard for me to predict the difference between 7th and 8th, because I know that a new edition is going to be coming out eventually at some point. Chaos Dwarves are like dwarves. They're too expensive to take in hordes. I can obviously take hordes for my hobgoblins and my rabble, and by definition I'm going to be doing that. The Chaos Dwarves themselves, I think they're going to play much the same way they did beforehand, because Chaos Dwarf armies in general can outmaneuver in ways that dwarves can't. The fact that my dwarves can now charge makes a limited impact. I don't think they're going to improve significantly. If anything, I think that my bull centaurs are less useful now than they were before. I didn't like the way they transitioned from 7th to 8th edition. From 7th edition Ravening Hordes, they had 2 attacks, but their leadership was 9. In the GT Indy, they have a leadership of only 8, so I'm a little more afraid to use them. They only have initiative of 2 with great weapons. I suppose I could give them 2 hand weapons instead, and that might be the way to go. but with initiative of 2, the opponent's going to attack first, so I don't see myself using them as much. They're considered bottom of the barrel in terms of comp. I think they're going to stay there. It's just the truth of it. But then again, I don't play them because I think I'm going to dominate the world. I play them because they're cool and fun, and I like them. So we'll see what happens from the 7th edition to the 2.08th edition GT Indie Army. As for the Ravening Hordes, again, bottom of the barrel, no big improvements. They're about the same as they were before. The fact that my templates now hit everything instead of only hitting partials is great, but that's not an escalation of power that's keeping up with the Joneses. So that's, I think, where they stay.
Sure.
All right. Well, I think we've covered up sort of our last-minute observations from 7th to 8th, but we can get in more into detail show by show.
Yeah, we got a lot coming up, and we're going to be doing a show with, going through, we're going to do that double show talking about the new rules and the changes, and then just doing a basic walkthrough on putting up, how to basically walk through the actual plane of the game mm-hmm. as we play it.
So next time we get on to the episode, we're going to have the 8th edition books in our hands.
Yep. And we'll get through those, and then we've still got all the errata to talk about, too. So we got a lot coming up in the next couple of shows. We'll be double-dipping on a couple of them for that, but I think that'll be a lot of fun. I'm really excited to see where those things go.
So warm up your dice. Sounds like we're going to be rolling lots and lots and lots more dice than we used to.
Absolutely. I hope this was helpful for the people listening, too. I mean, it was just kind of like, hey, let's go through the books real quick, and what do you see changing? What do you see getting better? What do you see getting worse? And on the fly, I think it was kind of interesting.
It's interesting.
I had fun doing it.
Yeah. All right, folks. Well, we'll see you next time. And
thanks again to our advertisers, Unique Gifts and Games,
Legion Games, and Brian.
Our sponsors, yeah, Legions and Brian. And hopefully people at Unique Gifts and Games on Friday for the release party. And we'll see you there.
All right. Take care.